जय ओम शुभावत परमहंस परिव्राजक आचार्य अष्टोत्तर सदस्य श्रीमान अभय चरणारविंद भक्ति वेदांत गोस्वामी महाराज शील प्रभुपाद की जय ओम नित्य लीला प्रविष्ट शुभावत परमहंस परिव्राजक आचार्य अष्टोत्तर सदस्य श्रीमान भक्त सिद्धांत सरस्वती महाराज शील प्रभुपाद की आनंद गोड़ी वैष्णव वृंद की रामाचार्य श्री हरदास ठाकुर की प्रेम स्वामी श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद की श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोविंद श्याम राधा गुंडी गोवर्धन की वृंदावन धाम की मायपुर धाम की मधुरपुरी धाम की जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की द्वारकापुरी धाम की गंगमाई की यमुना माई की तुलसी देवी की भक्ति देवी భక్తి వేదాంత స్వామిని నామినే నమస్తే సరస్వతి దేవిం గౌరవాణి ప్రజారిణి నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్య దేశకారిణి. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ, ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ, ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. సంసార సాగరే మగ్నం దీనం మాం కరుణానిధి కర్మగ్రాహ గృహీతాంగం మాముద్ధర భవార్ణవాద్. శ్రీమద్భాగవదాఖ్యోయం ప్రత్యక్ష కృష్ణమేవ హి స్వీకృతోసి మయా నాథ ముక్త్యర్థం భవ సాగరే. మనోరథే మదీయోయం సఫలా సర్వదా త్వయా నిర్విఘ్నేనైవ కర్తవ్యం దాసోహం తవ కేశవ. భవే భవే యథా భక్తి పాదయోస్తవ జాయతే తథా కురుష్వ దేవేశ నాథస్త్వం నో యద ప్రభో. నామ సంకీర్తనం యస్య సర్వ పాప ప్రణాశనం ప్రణామో దుఃఖ శమనం తం నమామి హరిం పరం. జన్మాద్యస్య యదోన్వయాదితరద చార్తేష్వభిజ్ఞస్వరాన్ తేనే బ్రహ్మ హృదయ ఆది కవయే ముహ్యంతి యల్సూరయ. తేజో వారిమృదం యథా వినిమయో యత్ర త్రిసర్గో మృషా ధామ్నా సేన సదా నిరస్తగుహగం సత్యం పరం ధీమహి. ధర్మ ప్రోజ్జిత కైదవోత్ర పరమో నిర్మత్సరాణం సదా వేద్యం వాస్తవమత్ర వస్తు శివదం తాపత్రయోన్మూలనం. శ్రీమద్భాగవదే మహాముని కృదే కిం వా పరేరీశ్వర సద్యో హృద్యవరుద్యదేత్ర కృతిభి శుశ్రూషుభి తల్క్షణా నిగమకల్పదరోర్గలితం ఫలం శుభముఖాదమృద్రవ సంయుతం పిబద భాగవతం రసమాలయం ముహురహోరసిగా భువి భావుకాః. సచ్చిదానందరూపాయ విశ్వోత్పత్త్యాదిహేతవే తాపత్రయ వినాశాయ శ్రీకృష్ణాయ వయం నమః. యం ప్రవ్రజందం అనువేదమభేదకృత్యం ద్వైపాయనో విరహకాదరమాజుహావ పుత్రేది తన్మయదయత్తరవోభినేదు తం సర్వభూతహృదయం మునిమానదోస్మి. యస్వానుభావమఖిల శ్రుతిసారమేగం అద్యాల్పదీపమదితిదీర్షదాం తమోంధం సంసారినాం కరుణయాః పురాణగుహ్యం తం వ్యాససూనుముపయామి గురుం మునీనాం. నారాయణం నమస్కృత్య నరం చైవ నరోత్తమం దేవీం సరస్వతీం వ్యాసం తదో జయముదీరయే. కమనీయ కిశోరముగ్ధమూర్తే కళవేణుకొనిదాదృదానందోః మమ వాచి విజృంభదాం మురారే మధురీం నక్కణికాభికాభికాభినీం. నమామి విష్ణుపదాయ కృష్ణప్రసాయ భూతలే శ్రీమదే భక్తి వేదాంత స్వామి నిధి నామిని. നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവി ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണി നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യാദേശധാരിണി ശ്രീമൽ ഗുരുചരണാരവിന്ദാഭ്യാം നമ വന്ദേ നന്ദവ്രജസ്ത്രീണാം പാദരേണുമഭീഷ്ണശാം യാസം ഹരിഗതോദ്ഗീതം പുനാദിഭുവനത്രയം ഗോപീചരണാരവിന്ദ പരമാണവേ നമ പീതാംബരം കരവിരാജിതചക്രശംഖം കൗമോദകീ സരസിജം കരുണാസമുദ്രം രാധാസഹായമതിസുന്ദരമന്ദഹാസം വാതാലയേശമനിശം ഹൃദി ഭാവയാമി കോമളം പൂജയൻ വേണും ശ്യാമളോയം കുമാരക വേദവേദ്യപരം ബ്രഹ്മ ഭാസദാം പുരതോ മമ മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതി ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം കൃഷ്ണായ നമ ശ്രീമതി രാധികായേ നമ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ ഓം പാർത്ഥായ പ്രതിബോധിതാം ഭഗവതാം നാരായണേന സ്വയം വ്യാസേന ഗ്രഥിതാം പുരാണ മുനിനാം മധ്യേ മഹാഭാരതം അദ്വൈതാമൃതവർഷിണി ഭഗവതി അഷ്ടാദശാധ്യായിനി അംബ ത്വാമനുസന്ധദാമി ഭഗവത്ഗീതേ ഭവദ്വേഷിണി നമോസ്തു ദേ വ്യാസവിശാലബുദ്ധേ പുല്ലാരവിന്ദായതപത്രനേത്ര യേന ത്വയാ ഭാരതതൈലപൂർണ പ്രജ്വാലിതോ ജ്ഞാനമയ പ്രദീപ പ്രപന്ന പാരിജാതായ ത്വത്രവേത്രൈകവാണൈ ജ്ഞാനമുദ്രായ കൃഷ്ണായ ഗീതാമൃതദുഹേ നമഃ ഉപനിഷദോ ഗാവോ ദുഗ്ധാ ഗോപാലനന്ദന പാർത്ഥോ വത്സസുധീർ ഭോക്താ ദുഗ്ധം ഗീതാമൃതം മഹത് വസുദേവസുതം ദേവം കംസചാണൂരമർദനം ദേവകീ പരമാനന്ദം കൃഷ്ണം വന്ദേ ജഗദ്ഗുരും ഭീഷ്മദ്രോണതടാ ജയദ്രഥചല ഗാന്ധാര നീലോൽപല ശല്യഗ്രാഹവതീ കൃപേണ വഹനീ കർണേന വേലാകുല അശ്വത്ഥാമാ വികർണ ഘോരമകരാ ദുര്യോധനാവർത്തിനി സ്വതീർണ ഖലു പാണ്ഡവൈരണനദീ കൈവർത്തക കേശവ പാരാശര്യവജസ്സരോജമലം ഗീതാർത്ഥഗന്ധോൽക്കടം നാനാഖ്യാനകേസരം ഹരികഥാ സംബോധനാബോധിതം ലോകൈ സജ്ജനഷൽപദൈരഹരഃ പ്രീയമാനം മുദാ ഭൂയാദ് ഭാരതപങ്കജ കലിമല പ്രധ്വംസിന ശ്രേയസേ മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതി ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം യം ബ്രഹ്മാവരുണേന്ദ്രരുദ്രമരുദസ്ത്വന്വന്ദി ദിവ്യൈസ്തവൈർ വേദൈർ സാംഗപദൈർ പ്രമോപനിഷദൈർ ഗായന്തി യം സമഗാഃ ധ്യാനാവസ്ഥിത തദ്ഗതേന മനസാ പശ്യന്തി യം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം ന വിദുസുരാസുരഗണൈ ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമഃ. സർവകർമാണ്യപി സദാ കുർവാണോ മദ്വ്യപാശ്രയ മൽപ്രസാദാത് അവാപ്നോതി ശാശ്വതം പദം അവ്യയം. Yesterday we discussed that verse that Krishna is saying that one who is dependent on Krishna, one who is completely dependent on Krishna and who is engaged in karma, and such a person, Krishna says that he will reach perfection at the end. മൽപ്രസാദാത് അവാപ്നോതി ശാശ്വതം പദം അവ്യയം. ദെൻ ചേതസ സർവകർമാണി മൈ സന്യസ്യ മൽപര ബുദ്ധിയോഗം ഉപാശ്രിത്യ മച്ചിത്ത സതതം ഭവ. യെസ്റ്റർഡേ വി മെൻഷൻ ദാറ്റ് ഓൾസോ ദാറ്റ് കൃഷ്ണ സേയിങ് ദയർ ദാറ്റ് ഇഫ് യു ഹാവ് ഓഫേർഡ് ഓൾ കർമ്മം ടു കൃഷ്ണ ആൻഡ്
ultimately realizing that Krishna is the destination, and utilizing the buddhi yogam, intelligence, for that purpose, and removing all the dirt from inside, Krishna says, absorb in me, machitta sadadam bhava. Then he said, machitta sarvadurgani madprasadal tarishyasi, adajetum ahankara na shroshyasi vinangshyasi. Krishna says, even if any obstacles come in your path, when you are engaged in the service to Krishna, those obstacles, Krishna says, mal prasadal tarishyasi, it will be taken away by Krishna's grace. Adhachetum ahankara na shroshyasi vinangshyasi. Instead, due to false ego or ahankaram, if he does not take Krishna's instructions and act according to his own whims, Krishna says, definitely you will go down in spiritual life. There will be no possibility of any success in spiritual path. Yad ahankaram ashritya na yolsi iti manyase mithesha vyavasayaste prakritingstvam niyokshari. Krishna saying directly to Arjuna that because of the ego, if you keep on insisting that you will not engage in the war, then your decision is a waste, completely wrong, because prakriti, material nature, will force you to act and to fight in this battle. Svabhava jena kaundeya nibaddha svena karmana kartum nechasi enmohal karishyasi avashopital. Krishna stressing that point again, that because you are bound, Krishna says to him, because you are bound, svabhava jena kaundeya, svabhavam is a bondage for us. All of us are bound by our svabhavam. So Krishna saying, svabhava jena kaundeya nibaddha svena karmana, and out of this illusion in you, that because of moham, kartum nechasi en mohal, because of moham or illusion, if you feel that you are not willing to fight, then karishyasi avashobital. Krishna saying, even if you don't want it, but you will be forced to act. Again, a strong, a very stern warning to Arjuna, not to be dependent on ahankaram, rather accepting the svabhavam of a person. So ahankaram and svabhavam, two things, dragging in two different ways. Ahankaram will force a person to make his own decisions. Krishna says, give up the ahankaram and surrender to the svabhavam. Svabhavam will decide which direction to go. So Krishna saying that, we also seen that many times, svabhavam yedam karma kurvannatmodi kilbisham, he mentioned there before. Because if you engage in the karma based on svabhavam, it will not bring any bad after effects from that. Because svabhava niyadam karmam. And svabhava niyadam karmam is swadharmam. Svabhava niyadam karmam is swadharmam. Swadharmam, the definition of swadharmam itself is svabhava niyadam karmam. So, and it, as we discussed yesterday, svabhava niyadam karmam or swadharmam, it is easier to offer it to Krishna compared to another karma which we have voluntarily gone and picked up. Once on svabhava niyanam karmam, it is possible to make possible to surrender to Krishna. That is why that verse, kayena vaja manasendriyarva buddhyalpanava prakriti svabhaval karodiyajan sakalam parasmai narayanayadi samarpayami is actually referring to karmam based on svabhavam. That is the one that is spoken about. So svabhava niyanam karmam, it is easier to surrender to Krishna because there is no involvement of me and mine there. I am the doer, I am the enjoyer, won't be there in the svabhava niyanam karmam. Whereas another karmam which we have forcefully taken upon ourselves, where we have, it is not in our svabhavam, but due to influence from the society or from our own ego, if you accept that, that karma will require a tremendous amount of effort. That means a lot of commitment of the ego. Ego will be involved in that. So, and param dharmam, you cannot offer that to Krishna. It is difficult because of the I factor there, or the ahankaram there. So, svabhavikam, that means a natural way, one's own karma, it is possible to offer to Krishna. And that action, that karma, will happen without the presence of ego in there, because it's svabhavam. That's the advantage. Because it's svabhavam, even in the absence of ego, that karma will flow through the body freely. Whereas for paradharmam, you have to involve your mind very strongly there, and includes the ego also, very strongly involved in that. This is the reason why Krishna is saying that not to go into paradharmam, rather engage in svabhavam and one's own dharmam, swadharmam in other words. So blocking that karmam, it is no good, because Bhagavad Gita is saying to Arjuna also, the intention is not to engage Arjuna into fight the war. Instead, what Bhagavad Gita is doing is taking out that block what Arjuna had in him in fighting. He had a block there, isn't it? That's why he was not willing to fight. So Bhagavad Gita is doing is removing that block from inside, because Krishna knows very well that Arjuna will fight irrespective of Krishna tells him or not, because that's already there in his svabhav, in his prakriti. Therefore, all Krishna is doing that is that block, what is blocking Arjuna from inside, Krishna is removing that from inside, and his own svabhavam is to fight. Arjuna's svabhavam is to fight, and that he will do even without Krishna telling him to do it. So, prakritistham, Krishna says, prakritistham yokshasi, isn't it? And Krishna says, your prakriti will do that job. I don't have to tell you to fight. Your prakriti will do the fighting. I don't have to tell you to fight. All these verses are to importance of stressing to us that how a society which is based on varnam, based on varnashram dharmam, particularly varna dharmam, how important it is. Without that varnam, no society can function effectively. And particularly in the progress of spiritual life, spiritual path, this division is based on varnam. And varnam is based on gunam and karma, is it not? We have seen that Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra divisions have come because of different karma and different gunam. So that karma and gunam, if you allow that to flow freely through that person will get released from his svabhavam, and in that process he will develop the necessary purity inside to understand Bhagavad Gita. That is the benefit Krishna is saying here. Look at the next verse. Svabhavajena Kaundeya Nibhaddasena Karmana Kartham Nechasi and Mohal Karishyasya Vashopital Svabhavajena Kaundeya Nibhaddasvena Karmana Kartham Nechasi and Mohal Karishyasya Vashopital Svabhavajena Kaundeya. Again, Krishna is coming back to svabhavam. Svabhavajena Kaundeya Nibhaddasvena Karmana Kartham Nechasi Enmohal Karishyasi Avashobital. Krishna is saying here, this is another thing as far as prakriti is concerned. Krishna says to Arjuna, Kaundeya, svabhavam karmam due to svabhavam. That is why it is called svabhavajam. Svabhavajam. Remember that jam word is something that is born with you. Earlier also we saw there another verse where Krishna mentions there that this word jam, how it is born with us. It is born with a person. Karmam also Krishna mentions this is sahajam karma kaundheya. In the 48th verse you will see sahajam karma kaundheya. Karmam is born with us. You can't separate it out. Though karma vasana inside us will act at the time, appropriate time comes. As soon as it gets the opportunity, it will come out. Sahajam karma kaundeya. There he mentioned. Again he is saying there that karmam is dependent on svabhavam inside, the vasanas inside. So therefore he is saying here, svabhava jena kaundeya nibhaddhasvena karmana. Karmam is controlled by svabhavam Arjuna. And purva samskaram, that means karmam what we have performed in previous lifetimes, and various karmam that is created as samskaram inside. And the karmam that is born from that karmam, we are bound. We are bound by that. That svabhavam, what we have developed due to the vasanas that has come from our previous karmam, is binding us now, is bound by us. We are bound by that. And Krishna says, look at that and learn from that. That is the important message. Look at yourself. So knowing oneself is very important, where we fit in this world. Not to think that everybody is bound. That's the first thing. Everybody is bound. And one should learn that, looking at oneself, and he should give enough attention to himself and know his vasanas and svabhavam within. So, our svabhavam, or the karmam that comes from the svabhavam, is our jail. That's our prison. We are in that prison, caught in that prison. That's why Krishna is saying here, nibhadha svena karmana. Nibhadha svena karmana means that you are bound in that. Within that prison you are stuck. Karmam and svabhavam, in that prison we are stuck inside. And instead, just by illusion, if you start acting, so the salsangam is for this purpose, to remove that moham from inside. Illusion from inside. Moham means nothing but avidya inside. That is what it is. Avidya, or which covers our knowledge. Knowledge is this. Which one? Svabhava jena kaundeya nibhadha svena karmana. But when we have no knowledge, what will you do? You will act independently. To prevent people acting independently, all these laws in the Shastram has been stuck up. But when you change all these law, what Krishna has spoken, and if we act independently, that society will never be able to find any peace within. It always been a disturbed state. You can see the after effect in the society because of that. So, moham means that screen which covers the real knowledge inside. The knowledge is this, svabhava jena kaundeya nibhadha svena karmana. That means if I think that I'm not bound by anything, no karmam can bind me, no svabhavam can bind me, I will do what I can and I'll do my best in this world. And I would like to do something which will satisfy my ego. If I operate on that level, Krishna is saying that is illusion. That is moham. That is called illusion. If I start thinking that I am competent and capable of doing anything what I want in this world and try to act independently, that is my illusion, Krishna is saying there. So therefore, he is pointing out to us that you are already in this prison of svabhavam and karmam. Svabhava jena kaundeya nibhadha svena karmana. He says, so that because of that moham or illusion, if I say that I will not do the karmam which is svabhava janyam, which will come out of my svabhavam, if I avoid that, then only thing is, Krishna says, karishyasi avashobital. He says, you can do it, but helplessly. You won't get any support from me. From Krishna's side, you won't get any support. What is the support Krishna is offering? Krishna is offering that, if you do svabhava jarma kaundeya, that svabhavam will remove the vasana from inside. That is the success of the karmam. Success of karmam is removing the vasana from within. If vasana gets wiped out, then you get purified inside. That will not happen. That is what he is saying here. Karishyasi avashobital. That karishyasi avashobital. Even if you say that, if you don't accept this principle, karishyasi avashobital. Even if you say that you don't want to, if you avoid this, that you will still do it, because it will be forced from within. Not only that, only when karmam, which is born svabhavajam, svabhavajena kaunteya, karmam that is born from svabhavam alone, if we start doing that, only then that energy inside us will flow freely. The energy to do the karmam will flow freely through us only if you engage in svabhava jena kaundeya. That is the important factor. Because the way we are built, this material body with its mind, intelligence, ego, senses, everything, there is a purpose behind it. And Krishna is telling us the subtle side of our structure. our bodily, our anatomy, in other words, is like that. That unless we understand this, Krishna says that only if you do sabhava jarmena kaundeya, only then the energy will flow through this body freely. And if you do like that, you won't have any problem. You won't have any problem. It will pass through the body freely. Whereas if you do something else which is not your sabhavajam karmam, it will only create conflicts inside. At every moment, that is what builds up stress inside. That's what builds up stress inside. So, sometimes you can see certain people, they are so accustomed to their sabhavajam mena kaunteya, sabhavam, they can act on that. They don't feel sick. Even when they feel sick, they can do their karma. Why? Because they know that that karma will flow through them. It is not causing any disturbances inside. It is us, when we get a little sick, we can't go to work, we want to withdraw from work. Or our karma, we have to stop for the moment. Because we feel that it is not, we are not able to do it. The reason for not able to do it is because of this factor. Then the karma is not the one which is based on sadharma. So the example Krishna is saying that this subhava jena kaundeya is like this, that just like Krishna takes his flute and plays, he plays the flute, and just like the music comes from that flute, in the same way Krishna's energy comes through, if you allow that to flow through our body freely, in that case, sabhava jaina kaundeya. Krishna, whatever energy Antaryami is offering us from inside, that energy will pass through this body and be able to execute the karma, provided that karma is sabhavajam. Karma is sabhavajam. And instead, if you say, oh, I am ill now, I can take some rest till I am cured, I will not be able to do that. All these things are coming, Krishna is saying here, that that is only due to executing the karma which does not come from your sabhav, come from your sabhav. So, sometimes we say that I'm not feeling very well, so I need to take some rest, isn't it? So, and that is, Krishna says, that if you are engaged in the karma according to your sabhavam, sabhava jena kaunteya, if it is based on sabhavam, that itself is the rest. That itself is the rest. So, if you continuously do that karma which has come from sabhavam, sabhavajam, then if you keep on doing that, it will keep on creating fresh energy in the body. There will be more energy will be created in the body. So, this example is there in many, many instances. And this you have to observe people, how they were, when they were put into the right slot, where they fit in. That means the karma, according to their sabhavam, how exceptionally well they can function in that state. Why? That sabhava jena kaundeya karma comes through them. There is a history of a person in Ramanashramam. There is one person, he was a mason, he used to do construction work. And he he was not into Shastram or studying Shastram or any such thing. For many, many years, 25, 30 years, he engaged in the masonry work. So when he came to Ramanashramam, Maharshi told him that from the day one, Maharshi sensed this, that his vasanas are still there in the construction work. So as soon as he arrived, Maharshi engaged him in constructing buildings. Various kinds of buildings had to be built. So he was given that responsibility to engage in the construction work. So he carried on doing that for a while, but then he started thinking, I have come here to do some sadhana and to be in salsangam and to be absorbed in the spiritual activities in the ashramam. But so one day, out of his frustration, he went up to Maharshi and told him that that you are every time asking me to do this work, never talks to me anything about Bhagavad Gita, Upanishads, or whatever you are talking to other people, you don't say anything to me. So when he mentions that, but instead you are talking to me about the cement, about the bricks, and about everything else in relationship with the construction work, he says to him. So at that time he says, what can I do, he said. Maharshi told him, as soon as I see you, I started seeing that a building is coming towards me, he said. A building is moving towards me. So that was the impression he got, seeing him. Because that is why that Svabhavam is so powerful. Svabhavam is such a powerful thing. Therefore, when that Svabhavam or Prakriti is so powerful, that it has such a strong power inside, vasana inside, if you don't allow that to function through, and instead if you force him to sit and listen to Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam or any such thing, it will be very difficult for him. He is not tuned for that. The tuning is not there inside. So, and he later on, the same person, after many years, he spent a lot of things, construction work, everything he did there. And then one day Maharshi told him, that's enough now. What you have done is enough. Go to your village and stay there. Everything will be taken care of. And he wrote a book at that time, which is, you can read that in the web, Living by the Words of the Master. He wrote a book called Living by the Words of the Master. If you read that book, he himself tells you that, how Maharshi helped him to get rid of that vasana from inside. And he said everything else was taken care of since then. Taken care of in the sense that he went and lived his simple life afterwards in his village, and there was no anxiety anymore. That is the blessing of the Mahatma. When you receive that grace in that way, this grace was that he was able to remove all his vasanas from inside and leave him free. He became free. After that, there was no anxiety about life. Everything was taken care of. He went to the village, and rest of the time he spent in that way, in the village, in a peaceful state. So, so many instances, this personality, he mentions this. What in this book he mentions there, Living the Words of Spiritual Master. He says how, without any sadhana, the karma vasana alone became his sadhana. The svabhavam was made as a sadhana for him. That is intelligence. That's intelligence. And that only a realized soul can do, who knows this. Otherwise he will put you in the wrong spot, wrong places. And then you could be in a trouble. You could be in trouble. So later on, that person, he mentions in the book that he was told not to go to the market anymore and to associate with the vyavaharams there. Instead, live in his ashram, and whenever he feels like, he could come to the mountain to spend the time there. So, karmam, if it is executed properly, then this will get exhausted. Karma vasana will get released from inside. If our karmam is not getting finished, what it means is we are not doing our karmam properly. That's why. Some people you can see, they are busy at 80 and 90 also. And they feel that it is a success, is it not? That they are able to work at 80 and 90. You'll see sometimes people busy with, they want to work till the last last second, to the drop dead, is it not? So why is that karma vasana not going away inside? So if the karmam is not finishing, what you have to understand is that the karmam, what they are doing at the moment, is not done properly. In other words, first of all, it's not swadharmam. They have gone and picked up other dharmam as their karmam, and they started doing that, and they are trying to become good at that, and trying to exact all the results from that. In this way, they are bound in that field of karma. That is why it's not getting finished. It will continue. It is a subtle side of the effect of karma. That is why that verse, Svabhava jena kaundeya nibhadda svena karmana. If you are bound by anything in this world, it's only this karma. Karma due to the svabhava. That's the only bondage we have here. Svabhava jena kaundeya nibhadda svena karmana. Very important verse. And kartum yachasi en mohal karishyasi avashopital Krishna is saying like that, that if you do not want to do it, that karma, helplessly you will be forced to act to do that. You see? Kartam nechasi en mohal, karishyasi avashobital. You will have no freedom there, Krishna is saying. Very categorical statement to all of us. That, svabhava jena kaundeya, nibaddha svena karmana. If you don't accept that principle, kartam nechasi en mohal, karishyasi avashobital, helplessly you will go and do your karma. This we can, if you look at ourselves, you will see how it happens. If you look at our own life, you will see sometimes certain things. You may have, sometimes you make a decision after using your intelligence. You start thinking that karma is not so good, I'm not going to do that and this, that and the other. But only it doesn't last very long. It bounces back again. Then you feel like doing it. Is it not? So that is why. So that is the indication here. That karma will go away on its own. You don't have to give up karma. Karma will get exhausted through karma vasana will go, finish, and that karma will be over. And you will get released from that. You won't feel any more obligations there to do the karma in this world. It's all because of the vasana inside, you are feeling compelled or propelled from inside to engage in karma. To engage in karma. So that is an important principle Krishna is mentioning here. And that is veni svabhava jena kaundeya nibaddha svena karmana kartum nachasi enmohal karishyasi avashobital. He is saying here that remember in Arjuna's case earlier Krishna mentioned there that shaujyam tejo dhridir daksham yuddhejapi avalayanam danam ishvara bhavascha kshatrakarma svabhavajam. 43 verse. Yathoktena kaundeya nibhaddo nischayena baddha svena almiyena karmana kartum naichasi yel karma mohad avivikadaha karishyasi avasha abhiparavashaha eva tal karma yasmad. So, in you, Krishna says to Arjuna, this kshatriya subhavam is there. Kshatram subhavam is there. And because you are bound by that kshatra subhavam. And due to your lack of discrimination, doesn't have that proper discrimination, and you make this decision not to fight, you will be forced to fight. He's saying like that. So, if the karma is not executed properly, in the proper way, whatever you may say, dhyana, meditation, spiritual life, samadhi and all these things, there will be no peace inside. This is the first after effect of not executing the karma properly. Shanti won't be there. There will be a disturbance inside. Because the reason for that is your svabhavam vasana is not getting released. You are engaged in a lot of karma. But that karma, you may be trying to do your best, but if it's not done properly means that the vasanas has to get released from inside. Not the after effect of the karma, not the results of the karma. But if a karma is executed properly, Krishna's point is that you may do any other spiritual sadhana, for example, dhyanam, japams, or whatever it may be, there will be no peace inside. Shanti won't be there. Always there will be a disturbance inside because the svabhavam is still remaining inside. So therefore, that is the reason why Krishna is saying that prakriti, every person has a prakriti. Prakriti is called svabhavam, isn't it? Prakriti is called svabhavam. Offer that svabhavam or prakriti to Krishna. Prakriti means what? Prakriti means no work will bind you independently. Work cannot bind you in this world. The bondage comes due to our attitude to the work. Work is not binding us. What binds us here is our attitude towards the work. For example, if you have the desire inside to get the results from the work, it is due to that bondage comes. These are subtle side of the karma, laws of karma. That bondage happens due to expectation of the results of the karma. And what work you are doing is important, but that dharma, pravrti, it has to be svabhavajam. It has to be svabhavajam. It has to come from svabhavam, that karma. And that has to be offered to Krishna. Only in that case, it will not bind us. It will not bind us. So, without expectation of results, karma has to be performed. And if it is like that, there is no necessity to engage in any kind of meditation about the karma. Mind does not require to be absorbed. Because Krishna is saying to Arjuna, in that mood if you fight, I will take care of everything. Krishna says, I will take care of everything. What has been given to you, do that work. That has come to you. So, if you remember, we mentioned this before also, Eganatha Swami, who wrote his famous commentary on the Ekadasha Skandam, Srimad Bhagavatam in Marathi, which has been later translated to other languages also. This Eganatha Swami, he ran away from home when he was a very little boy. He ran away from home, looking for a spiritual master. Looking for a spiritual master, he left home and ran away. Those the people were like that those days. The spiritual desire was so strong in him as a little boy, he wanted badly to find a spiritual master. So he left home and ran away when he was a little boy. And the spiritual master whom he met, Janardana Swami, he was a great yogi. He was a great yogi. And they were all these kind of personalities who had this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita in them, and they were able to function in this world in that way. So it was pretty unusual way they conducted their life in this world. He was a jnani, Janardana Swami was a jnani, he was a yogi, and he also had a full knowledge of the Shastram, Shastram very well. But you know what his job was? He was an army man. He was a soldier in the army. He was a soldier in the army of the king who ruled at that time. But and not only an ordinary soldier, he was on a higher position in the army, like a general or something like that. So one side, he will go and do that work every day, what he had to do. On the other side, he came in the tradition of Dattatreya, King Dattatreya Maharshi. In Maharashtra, there is a very strong following of this Dattatreya Sampradayam. That is the Dattatreya Sampradayam, Dattatreya Maharshi Sampradayam, whom we discuss, from whom King Yadu got the instruction of 24 spiritual masters in the Ekadasha Skandam. So Dattatreya Maharshi's tradition is very strong in Maharashtra. So that Dattatreya Maharshi's tradition he followed. So Ekanath went there, and 12 years he was busy in serving his spiritual master, Janardana Swami. For 12 years, they didn't teach him anything. He didn't teach any shastram to Ekanath. Ekanath had no instructions were given from the shastram. But Ekanath was having all the realizations of the shastram simply by his grace, Janardana Swami's grace, without studying any book. It's a very unusual story about Ekanath Swami. And he didn't have to go and study from anyone anything. Simply by the grace of the Janardana Swami, it happens. So, 12 years he spent time like this with Janardana Swami. And finally, spiritual master, Janardana Swami himself started feeling bad about it. He felt that day and night he is working. He hasn't asked till now anything. Any kind of help or nothing. He was simply absorbed in the work. So he never complained that, oh, you didn't teach me this, you didn't teach me that. Because in them days, the students knew what to teach, what to learn. And they used to ask that I like to learn. Seeing that seriousness in the student, the teachers used to teach the things properly to them. So, but he, our Ekanath Swami, never asked anything. Janardana Swami felt very bad about it. So one day, once when he was sitting and engaged in the worship of Dattatreya Maharshi, unusual way, a kind of feeling developed in Janardana Swami's heart for Ekanath. Janardana Swami thought, I have to do something for him. Many other students have come, they have studied and they have gone home. And here, he has not gone away, but he is not asking anything either. And so, in a feeling like that, Janardana Swami prayed to Dattatreya Maharshi to give darshan to Ekanath. To give darshanam to Ekanath. And so, when Janardana Swami was engaged in this deity worship, Ekanath Swami has gone to Godavari River to bring the water from there. He has gone there to bring the water from there. So, when he prayed to Dattatreya Maharshi like this, Dattatreya Maharshi gave darshanam to Ekanath at the river bank. At the river bank where he was collecting the water. And for Sandhyavandanam, Ekanath has gone there, and after his Sandhyavandanam, he will bring the water from there. Our Janardana Swami knew that Dattatreya Maharshi will give darshanam to Ekanath at that time. He knew that. And what they call it is Shaktipadam. It's like a stroke, it comes, that power of the spiritual master's mercy comes like that. And so he thought that Ekanath must have had his darshan. So because of that, Ekanath could be delayed in coming back from the river with the water. But quite surprisingly, when Janardana Swami was thinking about all this, Ekanath came back with the water in the hand, in his earthen pot. He was carrying the water. Ekanath returned from the riverbank. So our Janardana Swami got confused. How could he come back like this? He must have had the darshan of Dattatreya Maharshi. That means naturally, if you see the darshan of a great soul like Dattatreya Maharshi, you won't be able to leave him like that and come back from there. So how could that happen? So when he came back, and when he looked at Ekanath's face, he couldn't see any change in him or any kind of happiness or any recognition of any unusual incident happening like that. So he observed, he came back, he brought the water, cleaned up the place and sprinkled the water and cleared up the area for him, which was generally what he has done every time. And so Janardana Swami got a little bit doubt about that. Did he have a darshan or not about the Dattatreya Maharshi? This doubt came to his mind. And so the way he asked him was, did you have any unusual experience at the river bank when you went there? He says to Ekanath. Janardana Swami asked Ekanath, did you have any unusual experience when you were there? He says, yes. Why? He says, I had the darshan of Dattatreya Maharshi, he said. But the way he replied was, Ekanath replied was that so many people wants to see the Dattatreya Maharshi, isn't it? Dattatreya was a very famous personality. And the way he replied was, yes, I've seen him, he says, just like as though I met somebody on the street. In a very casual way he replied that. And then what did you do then after that? He says, I told him I've got plenty of things to do. I don't have so much time, came back, he said. This is how Ekanath was. That Guru Bhakti in him. That surrender and service to the spiritual master. Janardana Swami says, So you dropped everything and you came back here. You didn't wait and talk to him, he said. No, because I've got things to do here. I've said this to the Dattatreya Maharshi and I came back, he said. So he says, I have prayed to the Dattatreya Maharshi to give you darshanam. Ekanath says, I never asked you for that. This was his reply to Janardana Swami. Ekanath is saying, I never asked for it, he said. You have arranged all that, that's fine, but I never asked for it. So, I never mentioned any time that I am lacking anything. I am getting everything what I want. This was that attitude of Ekanath Swami. So, and he says, if I want to see a form is always in front of me like you. That form is enough for me. Remember, seeing a form is not a success in spiritual life. It's only considered to be a step in the spiritual life. Like Krishna gave the darshanam to Narada Maharshi, to Dhruva Maharaj and many others to strengthen their faith. But seeing a particular form alone is not the ultimate ultimate realization. Ultimate realization is realizing who we are. Once that relationship is known with Krishna, that is the perfection of spiritual life. Form will appear and disappear. There's nothing we can do. Sometimes they'll appear, sometimes they can disappear. It's not permanent. But realizing the self is a permanent thing, because realizing self means your relationship with Krishna is firmly established. Krishna says that, isn't it? That if you ask me who I am, Krishna says, ask the person who is asking this question, and that is my form. That's the same answer. That knowing our identity, spiritual identity or self-realization, is the higher realization than seeing a particular form. That is why Ekanath says to Janardana Swami, as far as form is concerned, I already have a form in front of me. Now another form comes in front of me, Dattatreya Maharshi. What does it matter? It makes no difference to me, he said. This form is sufficient for me. I don't need another form. So, I never complained to you that I didn't see. Dattatreya is incarnation of Vishnu. Like Durvasav, Dattatreya and the moon. Three incarnations there. You will see in the Bhagavatam. So, Durvasav is Shiva's incarnation. Dattatreya is Vishnu's incarnation. And moon is incarnation of Brahma, Lord Brahma. So he says that I was not asking for a form to look at. So Janardana Swami is a fully realized soul, and he says to him that you are not even attracted by the form. You're not even attracted by the form. And to see something or form or any kind of experience, even such desires have gone away from inside. In Ekanath didn't have any kind of desire inside. And therefore, you are not an ordinary person. Janardana Swami says to Ekanath, and you don't require any education. You don't require any education. And it is at that time that Janardana Swami told Ekanath Swami to write his famous commentary on the Chatushloki Bhagavatam. The four verses, Chatushloki Bhagavatam, the commentary he has written, that is famous in the Marathi language. Like Ekadasha Skandam, he wrote about the Chatushloki Bhagavatam itself. And also, he told him to write a commentary on Hastamalaka Gita. Acharya Swamiji's Hastamalakiyam book, on which that commentary also Ekanath Swami wrote at that time. So these two famous books, Ekadasha Skandam commentary and Hastamalaka Gitam commentary by Ekanath, is famous, well-known thing. So, so the attitude was that no attachment anywhere and no speciality to anything. No speciality to anything. Karma has to be done, and that is being done, and no expectation of results either. Everything offered to Krishna. And Arjuna, Krishna is saying to Arjuna, if you have that attitude, then you won't be bound by the karmam here. And the prakriti becomes offering to Krishna. Prakriti means svabhavam, it becomes an offering to Krishna. So, in our life also in this world, if there is no sangam anywhere, no sangam anywhere, and that is the secret in this Bhagavata Dharma, Bhagavata Sampradaya. The secret of Bhagavata Sampradaya is like that. That particularly in life, not to develop any personal taste. Not to develop any personal taste. Whereas here everything is very personal, isn't it? Want to make it as much as personal as possible. So anything if you do in life, if it does not become a personal preference, when it becomes personal preference means there is attachment there. That's why the personal preference comes. So, therefore, always the advice is not to develop any personal taste for anything. Sometimes you will see some people, oh, I like that so much, they say. And something, I hate him that so much. Sometimes I like it so much, sometimes I dislike so much. This liking, disliking is all not very good thing. This is all in the svabhavam it is. And if you allow that to happen, so Krishna is saying here, that according to one song, liking and disliking don't do anything in this world. Particularly, everything in relationship with the senses. Relationship with the senses. Suppose somebody has prepared some food, accept it without any questioning about that. Not to feel that this is good, this is bad. Whatever that's available, be satisfied with that. Because even they say that, this is a little bit more sensitive question. Because these topics, what Krishna is talking about, has a separate background behind it. And when you bring that into the modern background, often people will find it difficult to digest it. Krishna is saying, it is in this principle that if father and mother has arranged a marriage, just do get married and go. But, so, and if you do like that, if anything goes wrong, you won't get caught up in the trouble. It won't cause any problem. But if you keep insisting that it has to be like this, my specifications, everything, in both husband's case and the wife's case, both, if all the specifications are drawn out, and if you organize everything in that way, and if when things go wrong, things could be a lot more painful at that time. So that is why Krishna says here, anything, if you keep ask for it, then it will be like you are handing over the stick to somebody and asking to beat me. You hand over the stick to somebody and tell that person to beat me, and you are getting beaten by that stick. It will be like that. So, not being particular about anything in life, it is a good thing from the spiritual point of view. Not being particular about anything. Because when you become particular, that's when all these problems arise. And many of the things what we have to do, which is in relationship with our own life in this world, we shouldn't think that I like this, therefore I am doing it. Instead, I am doing that because it has come through me and it's a part of that karma, I am performing that. If you start liking some karma and start doing that, it will create bondage. If you start liking some karma and get engaged in that karma, it will create bondage. So, no karma, you should do that with your liking. Liking is used to cause problems later, because you can see there that many times if you like some karma and do that and the results don't turn up, then you become completely shaken by that. And instead, somebody has given you a karma, and if it has to be done, if you just do it without caring for the results of that karma, and in that case, you will see that there won't be any bondage from that karma. And instruction will keep coming from inside, how to do that karma. And everything else Krishna will take care of. So, in some way, somebody will give you the direction in that time. Only thing is to have the capacity to analyze the situation, that Krishna has come in a particular person, in a form, and given that particular instruction to a karma in a particular way. So, sometimes these instructions come directly through some mahalmas, through some mahalmas, sometimes even through children it can happen. So it not necessarily it has to come through the spiritual master, these instructions in life. Because spiritual master is a tattvam. Is a tattvam it is. It's not a person as we think about that. So if somebody has given some instructions at home, and if he is senior to you by age, it is better to accept that instruction rather than thinking that, he doesn't know. How does he know? What does he know? If you take that attitude, then that's not a very good approach in spiritual life, because that will create distress later. Krishna is saying here that in some instances, in this Swabhavam, when we are talking about, that's why all these things have come up. So, in certain instances, sometimes even through children, you may get some guidance in life, as well as you may think that they are children, but it is possible that Krishna has instructed you through them what's the right thing in life. We are going like this with the blinkers in our own understanding in life, but sometimes in life, your own children may give you some help at some point in form of instruction, or Krishna has spoken through them. But you must have the wisdom to accept it. But often we don't. Because we think they are children, they don't have the knowledge, we have the knowledge. We have accepted it that way. Krishna is saying that is somewhat harmful. Because our conditioning is such that we don't want to take any instructions from anybody. So whatever that may be inside them, that this guru principle, that's what we are talking about, guru principle, operates in various ways. Sometimes through the children, sometimes through the mahatmas. Through different persons, Krishna can talk to you. If you are a person who is relaxed about karma and who has that strong desire inside for spiritual advancement, if you are genuine inside, you will see instructions coming from through different sources. It can come through children, it can come through grown-ups, it can through some mahatmas, it can come to you. So, through some phase that instructions may come. So, act accordingly. That sensitivity one must have in life. One must have in life. So, if you learn to live like that, the advantage is you will not act based on your ahankara. Do you understand? That if you learn this technique, this process, what Krishna is saying, that if you know that you have a genuine desire to make progress on the spiritual path, if the desire is genuine inside, spiritual master manifests through various forms, through children, through adults and the family, or some mahatmas, in various ways that instructions can come to you. Provided your desire for spiritual life is very genuine and you still have that relaxed mood, what we are talking about with karma is concerned. So when instructions comes like that, if you accept that, the benefit is that ahankaram will not be a part of that karma, because there is no ego there, is it not? That you are accepting somebody's instruction is a big thing in life. We don't have that quality in us. That is our biggest problem, isn't it? We like to be always not being told. That's our nature in us. Shastram doesn't allow that. Shastram says to us that if you can engage in karma in such a way that it does not strengthen your ego inside, and for that to happen, you have to have this approach, able to accept instructions from others and to act on that behalf. If you do like that, Krishna is saying here, this is a practical thing, but it is a secret of becoming advancing in spiritual life. How to take that instructions from others. Because you never know, if you are genuinely seeking for spiritual life, you never know where the instructions will come from. It can come from many, many sources. And at that time, if you start rejecting that thinking based on your own ego and start accepting only what you think is proper, then you are stuck there. That is what Krishna is saying, that illusion will go away from inside if you follow this process. So those three things we spoke about before, ahankaram, balam, darpam. Remember? Ahankaram, balam, darpam. Balam and darpam strengthens ahankaram, strengthens the ahankaram. So all this is happening to being dependent on personality. Is it not? When you are accepting instructions from others, what it means is you are dependent on the personality more than anything else. Your own personality, in other words, that because you have given so much importance to your own personality, therefore you are finding it difficult to accept the instructions from others. So Krishna's point is, this balam and darpam, these are the two forces inside which strengthens the ahankaram of a person. So, and that is coming from avidya. So all these three things, ahankaram, balam, darpam, all three of them, the more we are dependent on our own avidya inside, it will continuously influence our spiritual life. This is a very important principle. Because that is what Krishna is saying there, take my shelter, take my shelter. He keeps repeating that. Is it not? Earlier you remember? Machitta sarvadurgani malprasadal tari. Why does he say this? There is a reason behind it. Reason for saying that is adajeltum ahangaram nashroshasi vinangshasi. Krishna is not particularly bothered whether you surrender to him or not. What does it matter to Krishna? Whether you surrender or not. What the point what Krishna is making is that if you develop this attitude, it will weaken your ahangaram. That is the reason why he is telling us to do that. In order to weaken that ahangaram inside, he is saying that machita sarvadurgani mal prasadal tarishyasi. When we say surrender to Krishna, what reason is that behind it? Reason is this, that somehow or the other, to make that ahangaram to weaken that ahangaram inside. So so depending on Krishna, that is what Krishna is saying. Dependence on Krishna means that without taking the shelter of avidya or ignorance inside, and Mahalpa's life, if you look at, you will see there, they will always see things as Krishna's decision. Niyati. Bhagavat Niyati or Krishna's Niyati. And if we have the good intelligence, our intelligence is pure, in that case, when great personalities, when they give the instructions to us, then how to follow that in our life, in there, we will not have any doubt about that. Any doubt about that. And they will give you that guidance from within, which direction to go, and what is auspicious for us. And if, after effect of that, if anything goes wrong there, whatever it may be, the after effect will not affect you. Will not affect you. This is the benefit from that. If you have followed a Mahalpa's instructions, and that instructions, whatever that happens from that, good or bad, it won't have any effect on you, finally, from that. On the other hand, Krishna says, if you do it on your own, if it is your decision, based on your desire, all after effects of that will come on your head. Will come on your own head. So, this is an important principle. This is an important principle. It is on this basis of this principle that this parampara has all been come. All the, remember, these different paramparas exist in this world, isn't it? Four Vaishnava paramparas, then Advaita parampara. All the parampara process is based on this principle. Why we give so much authority to parampara? For this reason only. That no decision is made in spiritual life based on your ego. Based on your ego. To avoid that. Otherwise what will happen? Everybody will make his own decision. He will say, this is the way what I'm going to do. If you do that, that won't bring the proper results. Krishna is saying that. So for this reason only, all the sampradayams have come. We think something different, isn't it? We think that our understanding is like this, that parampara is there. We say, we pass on to our Guru Maharaj, he pass on to his Guru Maharaj, he pass on to his Guru Maharaj, like that it reaches Krishna, we say. Similarly, when Krishna gives something, it comes through the channel and gets to us. So, something in our own mind, we formulate some understanding about that. But the principal reason why this sampradaya system, which doesn't exist in any other tradition, except in the Vedic tradition, where sampradayam is given so much importance, is for this reason. That in sampradayam, you don't have to make decision. Somebody else has made the decision already. You are just following them, their footsteps. You just follow them. And therefore, any good or bad what comes from that, you are not responsible. You follow the parampara is responsible for that. You don't have to accept the responsibility. So, either taking the shelter of the great souls or elderly members in the family, taking their shelter, all the, like grandfather, grandmother, their instructions, all these are helpful in these situations. So, and to live in that way, under their shelter. So, if you do like that, then anything happens in life, results, good or bad, it will not have any catastrophic effect on us, because you have followed the tradition. I didn't break the tradition that way. So then the question will come, if it is like that, if I have to listen to everybody else in this world, so that is, and they will say that this is all very hypothetical questions, hypothetical, isn't it? So, but we know that, but if we are serious in spiritual life, and if you are serious in your practicing bhakti, you will know how to handle that situation, how to handle that situation, and at the appropriate time, the answer, the doubts will be clarified. Krishna will know how to clarify that. So, and if you, at the right time, if the question comes up, the answer will also come from within. But basically what Krishna is saying here, that not to depend on one's ego and learn to live in this world. Not to depend on the ego and to live in this world. That is our greatest weakness. That ego is deciding everything, isn't it? And this aspect Krishna is saying here, not to be under the shelter of the ego, instead being freed from the ego and able to operate like that, that is called dharmam. Krishna is saying that nothing you should do in this world according to your ideas, your plans. Because what Shastram has instructed, that is called dharmam. That's called dharmam. So live according to the Shastram. That is what again Krishna is stressing that point. Earlier he mentioned there in the last chapter, Ya Shastra Vidimul Srajya Vartade Kamakarada. Remember? And he also mentioned there, Tasmar Shastram Vidhayanoktam Karyakartam Iharhasi. Shastram should be the authority, not the individual. Individual should not be authority. So people ask this question, why should I listen to the Shastram? And why? Because the answer to that question is, if people ask the question, why should I listen to Shastram? The answer for that question is, the reason for that is, so that you don't listen to yourself. That's the reason. You don't listen to yourself. To that extent, surrender to the Shastram is necessary. Shastram is not a book to test, textbook to study, like the physics or chemistry, and write an exam and get the certificate. That's not the purpose of the Shastram. Shastram is this, is the authority in life to guide us in life, isn't it? So, so that if you listen to the Shastram, you won't listen to your mind. That's the main reason. So that you don't listen to your mind. Shastram, whether it is practical or impractical, that's another question. But things which are not harmful, where Shastram has given instructions, and if you are able to follow that, why should you not follow that? If Shastram is giving instructions, and if it is practical, why should you not do it? That's the question. So, so people will say sometimes, so much instructions in the Shastram, it is not possible to follow all that in life in these days. And that is not our problem, our mistake. Because if you cannot do it in this life, according based on the Shastram, then we are not bound by that. We are not bound by that. But those things which can be done based on the Shastram, that we should live according to the Shastram. We should live according to the Shastram. Otherwise, whatever the instructions the sadhus or the realized souls, whatever they have spoken about that, follow their path. And if you keep on living in that way, based on the sadhu, Shastram, spiritual master, guru, in that way, what is the advantage is, eventually, pride will go from inside. Ahangaram will go. Ahangaram will go. Otherwise, there is no other way of getting rid of this ahangaram. All this structure of sampradaya system and sadhu, shastram, guru, all these things is for this purpose. To get rid of that ahangaram from inside. So that no more we make the decision about life. We don't make the decision ourselves. And if you keep living like that, always forcing our ego to surrender to some principle. Surrender to some principle. Because if you do like that, in course of time, Krishna will make arrangements in such a way that that pride, what he's feeling inside, and Krishna will bring it into his control. He will bring it into his control. So, so every moment when Krishna brings it under control, every moment when that pride builds up inside, you may think like this, that somebody has given you instructions to surrender, and somebody has told you to take a humble position there, attitude there, but at the same time, that experience that you are surrendering to some principle or to another personality, that itself is that bring you down in your that ego level. Ego level will come down inside. Ego will take a lower level. So, once it so happened that a very great sannyasi, he was well learned and highly respected, and many disciples he had, and very well learned. But he will always go to the temple and pay obeisances to the deity. Obeisances to the deity there. So sometimes people asked in Vedantam, deity worship and all is considered to be not in a very higher level. Is it not? As in the Bhagavatam also, you can see that. Ishvare tadani adhineshu bali sheshu dishal suja uttamam adhyamam adham pragrata bhakti archayameva hare. So temple worship is considered to be on a lower platform. And this sannyasi has gone so high in his spiritual position. Realization-wise, knowledge-wise, and age, everything. So somebody asked him, Swamiji, why at this stage in life, why do you have to go to the temples and see the deity and pay your obeisances to the deity? Why all these things? He says to them, that is enough for me. It is always good to bow yourself down, bow down in front of another authority. So because he was a big personality, sannyasi, he couldn't do it in the ordinary people's level, ordinary people. So he decided to go to the temple and pay his obeisances there. Although he knew he was in a very advanced state of realization. So they also know this, that by surrendering and bowing down, nothing is a loss. It's not a loss, isn't it? And that pride will, if you keep on allowing that to go away from inside, Krishna is saying that that is the key to success. How you are able to control your false ego in life, that is the key to success in spiritual life. For that, whatever that is necessary, it is for only for that purpose, all the shastram was written, all the sampradayams were created, and all this discipline what we have in spiritual life is for this purpose. How to make a person free from ego, false ego. And the more and more one surrenders in that way, Krishna is saying there, that even if you don't have the experience of realization, that if you keep on continually doing that, the experience of Krishna will come from within. It's a very important secret of spiritual life. Krishna is explaining that. And even if you have not experienced a Krishna, only if you knew the benefit of surrendering, that is enough, because that surrender itself will later on generate a feeling of self-realization within. That's the surrender alone. Not any other knowledge, just that surrender alone. Because many people, because it is adhyatmam, when we talk about spiritual life, they are not willing to surrender. They are not willing to surrender. Because independence, freedom means that we think that the freedom of the false ego. We think that it is the freedom of the false ego. But actually, it is the freedom from the false ego. Not freedom for the false ego, instead the freedom from the false ego. We think that it is the independence for the senses. No, it is freedom from the senses. Freedom from the body, freedom from the mind, freedom from the senses. Similarly, freedom from the false ego. That is what is required. So, now the most difficult part. This is the most difficult part. To present it to the modern world. You may be thinking that where is this idea coming from? But unfortunately, this is one of the key factors what the rishis have taken into account when they wrote Smriti. In Smriti, when they mentioned this particular point, they gave so much importance to it. And it is this one point modern world is suffering very much to adjust with. What is that? Says a wife should surrender to the husband. What do you think? Very difficult, isn't it? If you say this outside, or anybody, people won't accept that. If you understand the reason behind it, then you will see what an amount of thought has been gone behind it. We think, oh, you say this modern man, he will say, oh, this is all the crap they have created, how to control our life, women's life, isn't it? How to control their life, that's why this has been created, this law. We are living in the age much more advanced where everyone is equal. This equality and spirituality won't go together. Either you can have equality or you can have spirituality. Spirituality is all about surrender. Equality is all this false independence. These two things won't go to hand in hand. Therefore, if you explain about this principle behind marriage, what they have followed them, what the rishis have insisted on this. You think rishis are like us, interested in controlling all the women and keeping them under control? What were they going to get from that? They have thought about this in such a deeper level. So they are saying that the wife should surrender to the husband. Wife should surrender to the husband. Because this concept of marriage itself is different, isn't it? Because marriage and wedding, it's not in the Vedic tradition. Marriage and wedding are the new modern world concept. Is it not? No, sorry. I'm not saying that because of that we have to go into the Sharia law. That's not what he's talking about. What Vedam is saying to us, that before a girl reaches a particular age, get her married as early as possible, because, and that vivaham or marriage is also divided. Of course, all these are not practical today, but we have to respect that principle what they have spoken. That you can't say it was wrong. The principle you can't deny. Idea was that vivaham or marriage in various categories is spoken. Brahmam, Rakshasam, Gandharvam, Paishajikam. There is all kinds of marriages spoken in the Vaidya system. Is it not? So this Brahmam, what is the pure style of marriage, is when you are a very, very small, young girl, child, we will say that's a child marriage. Now we have fixed the age also, 21 or 25, whatever it may be. Like the pension age is going up, one day we'll see it raising that also. 40 or 50, you only get married after that, he'll say. So, because we don't know the concept behind it, so we started finding faults with us, with this child marriage, isn't it? Rishi's point is, what they're saying to us is that it's not the marriage that is what is behind it. The boy gives Brahmobadesham to the girl. Boy gives Brahmobadesham to the girl. So, the Brahmobadesham, when it is given, like Parikshit Maharaj was given Brahmobadesham by Shobhramarshi, is it not? So, the same mantram, what was used for Brahmobadesham, that mantram alone is chanted at the same time when the girl is handed over to the boy, when they are very, very small, the boy and the girl, very, very small. The principle is that the man should follow it strictly and the girl should depend on the boy. That's the concept behind that. The boy should follow it rigidly and the girl should depend on the boy. So, rishis found out this principle from Prakriti. From Prakriti they have found out that. One person follow the husband and wife, boy and girl when they grow up also, much before they get bigger, from the early days itself, the boy engages seriously in spiritual life. And the girl completely depends on the boy. And together, they complete the mission. They complete the mission. In that way, both of them will get released from this material existence once for all. So rishis implemented this into our life. But this marriage and wedding, what we say nowadays, whatever that is happening now, what to call it, marriage or wedding or whatever, and we make that a big thing out of it, is it not? We think that it is such an important thing, it's Vedic, this, nothing is Vedic, what's going on? What's going on now is just what suits the society, what society has created. But what the rishis have created was, at a much early age, boy 8 or 10 years old, girl also 5, 6 years old, that time itself both of them are, this is Brahmam. Brahmam it is, not Gandharvam, Rakshasam, Paishajiyam, Brahmam. At an early age in life, as soon as boy is taken and given Upanayana ceremony, immediately after that Brahmavadesham is given and the girl is associating with him and together they engage in spiritual activities from that age itself. And marriage, wedding doesn't come in their life anymore. It goes on from there on, the life starts. Spiritual life begins together. And in that process, the rishis have set up like that. He says that one person, that's a boy, he depends completely on Krishna's mercy, grace. Totally dependent on Krishna. And the other person takes the shelter of this person who is dependent on Krishna. Boy takes the shelter of Krishna directly. He is given all the instructions to follow. He depends on Krishna and he continues his spiritual life. The girl is supposed to take the shelter of this person who has taken Krishna shelter. This is the setup they have created. They didn't set up the modern marriage or wedding. We have set it up, all these things. Big marquees, huge amount of money splashing, and invitations and feasts and all other things has come much later. This is not the Vedic system. Vedic system is this, that Brahmam, particularly Brahmam, is based on this understanding. And in that way, the boy is dependent on Krishna. If you train him up in the early days in life to be dependent on Krishna, and always Shastram is helping him, the spiritual master is helping him, the society is helping him in that process, and the girl is completely dependent on the boy. She doesn't have much of a spiritual responsibility. Spiritual responsibility is on the boy's side, and the boy is fully conscious of that. Conscious of that. So it is that process what existed then. And this is called that depending in, living in this way, mutually supporting each other and making their life auspicious at the end. That is, Krishna says that ashrada bhava, ashrayam ashrada bhava. So ashrayam is the secret behind that. And you have to develop this. Ashray means shelter. Shelter somewhere, isn't it? Somewhere means, ashray means what? Ashray means surrender, is it not? Surrender. Somewhere you have to surrender. So, all great mahalpas, if you look in their life, you will see their secret is this surrender. Their secret was this surrender. And many of these great souls, if you look, you will see that they had this in their life. If you look back into their life. So, many instances you can see that this has happened in their life. They were surrendered. They lived as householders in this world, but there was a success. Now, if you start looking at it from a male dominating the female and all that, then that won't make any sense. That's completely on the bodily level, it is. But for a higher purpose, so that no false ego builds up in the girl's mind, and similarly, no false ego builds up in the boy's mind. That is how they have created this system. Boy is dependent on Krishna at a very early age. So if he is brought up in that way throughout their life, there is no opportunity for the ego to get strengthened inside. Similarly, if the girl is dependent on that boy for her living in this world, even she will also be freed from that problem of ego. Both have egos. Both of them have the ego. And it has to go. That is the idea behind that. And that is why this system was created. Brahmam, it's called. Marriage, what we call it now. So, if you look into in recent times, one of the great personality was Ramakrishna Paramahamsa's life. If you read their lifestyle, him and his wife Sharada Devi, how they lived together. That they lived in a very small facility, what they had in Dakshineshwar. And they were at a very early age, they were married. And she was instructed to prepare food for everyone who came to visit them. And such an early age, they got married that she didn't know anything else in life except to serve the husband. Whatever instructions he gave, she did that without questioning anything. And if that habit is developed from the early age, it becomes a lot easier. Later, it won't become as a problem. Problem comes when the ahankaram has built up very strongly inside, and then when the instructions are coming, then it becomes very difficult. Ahankaram won't accept that. The ego has been already strengthened in various ways. Ahankaram builds up inside. In her case, Sharada Devi's case, it's mentioned there that even whatever Paramahamsa has told her, she will do, as far as even the holy name asks her to chant, she will chant. And in one instance, she was chanting Hari Hari, and he says to her, "We are not Vaishnavas, we are Shaktayas." Shakti worshippers they were. So then she asked, "What should I chant?" He said, "You chant Shiva Shiva or Sri Parvati's name." And she started chanting that. She had no problem in changing from that. That to show that how much authority had the control and ego was never allowed to wake up inside. Always ego was kept under control. Even there, there was no choice. There was no choice. So this ability to surrender to an authority requires a lot of intelligence to come to this understanding. It takes time, because that is why when we look into the Vedic literature, you will see this continuous surrender process is spoken so much. We think surrender is something that we can do it our own at a particular moment in time. That will not happen unless it is created. So this whole principle of Sanatana Dharma is based on this principle, is this, that in one word if you ask, that's all it is, Sharanagati. Surrender. Surrender is the meaning of Sanatana Dharma. Sanatana Dharma is... So, Mahalpa, you have to surrender. Vedam, you have to surrender. All Shastram, you have to surrender. To Sampradayam, you have to surrender. Asampradayavit, Sarva Shastra Vidanyam, Murkhavad Ubekshaniyam Sarvatra. Ajaya Swamiji, in the Bhashyam, he writes like this. Asampradayavit means one who is not willing to accept the authority of any Sampradayam. Sarva Shastra Vitapi Murkhavad Ubeshaniyam Sarvatra. Even if he knows all the Shastram in this world, if he is not willing to surrender to the Sampradayam, Murkhavad Ubeshaniyam Sarvatra, he should be taken like a cobra and you should be thrown out. That is what Acharya Swamiji says here in the Bhagavad Gita Bhashyam. To such an extent, they had that faith in the Sampradayam, Sampradayam's strength. Not for that Sampradayam wanted anything from us, because if you surrender to Sampradayam, it means that you are accepting the authority of the higher authority in the tradition, not making anything on your own. That independence attitude will go away from inside. So, Acharya Swamiji in that Bhashya mentions there, in the Vaidika Sampradayam, in the Vedic traditions, one who does not follow any of these sampradayam, no matter how intelligent he is, you have to reject him like a murkha. Cobra. Yeah. Because the moment you become a revolutionary, that means you have taken shelter of your ego. Revolutionary nature is coming from this ego. Remember, sometimes people say they are very revolutionary. So this revolutionary nature comes from ego, which means that mistrust has come there, inside, and with the Prakriti also. Therefore, the Rishi Parampara, or the Rishis, they have given to us this, that in the Parampara, even if there is some defect somewhere, that defect will be rejected. But if there is... This is an important thing. You will see how Vedic tradition suffered because of this approach, because of this approach. It suffered in the sense that Vaidika system is so insistent on this sampradaya. Sampradaya, Shastram, and freedom from this ego. Freedom from this ego. So, if you ask this question, that suppose there is some fault in the parampara. This can happen, isn't it? In parampara also there can be some faults. But if there is some fault in the parampara, it does not matter, because knowledge is still there in the parampara, but it has happened when it comes to your personality, it has got affected by that. So, this is the same question. First time, Vedic system has asked Lord Buddha. Buddha had this problem. We have nothing against Buddha, Lord Buddha. But Buddha's problem was, and Buddha's realizations, we have no problem with that. But we have nothing against Buddha also. Buddha was a realized soul. But what happened was, when Buddha appeared in this world, and he rejected the sampradaya system, from that moment onwards, it appeared that Buddha has found out something new. You can imagine that, or what will happen. When Buddha took control of the preaching on his own, philosophy, he was a realized soul, he had the knowledge, he followed the Shastram, he rejected the parampara. That's what Buddha did. Buddha rejected the parampara, he wouldn't accept the parampara, but he was a realized soul. This can happen. Buddha's situation is very peculiar. It's very, very extraordinary here. So, the Vedics, what will happen, the after effect of that is, it brings into the point that Buddha has found out something new. It has come to that. Buddha realized and Buddha has found out something new. So, look at our Rishi Parampara, Vaidika Parampara. We do not know anything about any of the rishis who has found out this knowledge of the self. Is it not? For example, Upanishads, all the Shrimad Bhagavatam, all that, where is it coming from? We haven't got a clear idea where it's originated from, the knowledge. All we know, it's come from Krishna, of course. But we cannot give credit to any rishi. Shukha Brahmarshi doesn't say it's my realization. Vedavyasa Maharshi is not saying that it's my realization. Lord Narada Maharshi is not saying it's my realization. Lord Brahma is not saying it's my realization. It was given to him. It was given to him. So, because of this, in the Rishi Parampara, this is an important thing to know. In the Rishi Parampara, we have never given any importance to any Rishi for what they have given to us. In the sense that, like the Lord Buddha's case, a new tradition started, which is, we call it as Buddhism today. Is it not? And Buddha has not got the shelter of the previous Acharyas or the Parampara. Therefore, Vaidika Sampradaya, Sanatana Dharma, strongly opposed Bauddha. Do you understand? Why Buddha Madam was strongly opposed? For this reason. Because you have no backup behind. Whereas Sanatana Dharma, whether it be Shankaracharya, Ramanuja, Madhva, Vishnu Swami, Nimbarkacharya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all of them, if you observe, you will see they are taking the strength of the parampara behind them. In order that it is not theirs, they won't say it's my opinion. Never. Not one of them will say it's my opinion. They will quote the Shastram. On the authority of the parampara they followed, they will come with their own conclusions, will not allow any place for the ego to speak on their behalf. Whereas in Buddha's case, it's exactly different. Buddha rejected the parampara, didn't accept the parampara, and he spoke as his own everything. The moment you say something as your own, it has lost its authority. That is the principle. The moment you say something as your own, it has lost its authority. You cannot accept it anymore. That is why, in spite of the fact that so many rishis were there in the Vaidika tradition, look at the list of the rishis: Atri, Angiras, Mariji, Durvasa Muni, and Vishwamitra, Vasishtha. The endless list goes there in the Bhagavadam, is it not? And all the Puranams you will see, Agastya Maharshi and so many others. We do not say that they are our authority. You know, it has come through them. It has come through them. We don't even know the names of many of these rishis, where they lived, how they lived. Absolutely no idea about it. So Buddha spoke about nirvanam, self-realization, at the end, isn't it? So, and fact is, whatever Buddha has spoken, better than that, the Vedam has spoken about the realization. What Buddha has spoken, better than that, the rishis have spoken through the Upanishads. But in their realizations, there is no reference to the name, place where they lived, or any information about them. Rishis never gave any importance to their personality when they spoke. Whereas in Buddha's case, it went a little in the wrong way. So it is from the time, from Buddha onwards, that this personality became a strong force in the spiritual life. It is from Buddha this has started, and prior to Buddha, all of them, that personality will get dissolved in the knowledge. Knowledge was given upper hand, personality was kept behind, was never given any importance. So it is from the time Buddha onwards that this has started, and from that day onwards, you can look into the world and see what has happened. Everybody else has followed that same process, what Buddha did. Jesus Christ did the same, Lord Buddha has done. And Prophet also did exactly the same thing, and many others followed, and it's going on at the moment in the same way. See how much problem it creates. The moment you bring for the rishis, the knowledge in the Upanishads is the only thing what is to be spoken. Not to be spoken about the person who is behind it. They are not important. How much do we study about Vasishtha or Vishwamitra? Here and there in the stories, they may pop up somewhere. Apart from that, we do not give importance to them the way, because Vaidika system is Rishi Parambara, Arsha Parambaryam it is called, is always the stress is on the message, not on the person. It is from Lord Buddha's time this business started, bringing personality into it and presenting the truth through the personality. When it presents through the personality, personality takes control everywhere, in everything. And that is why so many different cults have developed based on this personality thing, and so many religions have developed on the same basis. So, so what has happened is that it is from the time Buddha onwards who sat in the middle and started speaking. Parambara is coming on all the time. The knowledge is getting transmitted through the parambara. But it is from Buddha's time, Buddha sat in the middle and started speaking the same thing. So, you can see this. Even Acharya Swamiji's case, he never spoke about himself. There was not a word spoken about himself. In that 32 years life when he lived here, he mentioned whatever he spoken, always Shastram behind it. Nothing to do with me, he said. He said, Shastram is saying this. So that is approach what the rishis have followed. And when that is broken, Yereva yataha dayopya param tameva margam tava nirdishami. So whatever they have said, all the acharyas have spoken like this. The path the rishis have followed, the same path we are following. That's all they will say. What the rishis have followed, the same path we follow. Buddha has also spoken this in one instance. So, but the process started with the Tirthankaras. They also did the same thing. So, because of all these things, that new sampradayams have started developing. Therefore, that is why Vivekananda mentioned about this. How he put it was, Buddhism is the rebel child for which Christianity and Islam are its offshoots. That's what he said about Buddhism. Buddhism is the rebel child from the Vedic tradition. It's the rebel child for which Christianity and Islam are the offshoots, are its offshoots. You can see too much of stress on that personality instead of the knowledge. Spiritual knowledge is not personality. That is a misunderstanding. But you can see in today's world how that has affected every level, isn't it? As soon as one personality comes, he brings something, everyone follows for the personality. He's not bothered what the message is. Message is forgotten. Personality becomes, takes over everything. That is what Krishna is also mentioning here, that the so because of this, various religious processes have come into practice today, what you see here in this world. So all of them are the after effect of that Buddhism. Then in prior to Buddha's time, wherever you have traveled in this world, why Sanatana Dharma was addressed like that? As Shashwadam, isn't it? Shashwada Dharmam. Followed everywhere. There was no other religious process because it is completely based on the knowledge. So, and human being also, he did not want a religion based on a personality. He didn't look for that. So, most of them were satisfied with observing the material nature. Now you can imagine what it happens. Competition begins then. Isn't it? How to make your group more popular and powerful. Simply number becomes the whole criteria. How many have you got yourself into, enrolled into your group? So this is all the after effects of this problem. Spiritual life was never centered around personality. It's us who have made it like this. Krishna didn't give importance to personality. Krishna also spoke the knowledge and moved out of the scene. Ramachandra did exactly the same thing. Spoke the knowledge and moved out of the scene. Is it not? But what we have done, this is that change that happened in the Sanatana Dharmam. It's a big change and we are paying for it now. We'll talk about it after a few minutes.
चेतो दर्पणमर्जनं वामः दावाग्निनिर्वापणं श्रेयकैतवचन्द्रिया वितरणं विद्यावधु जीवनम् आनन्दाम्बुदिवर्धनं प्रतिपद पूर्णामृतास्वादनं सर्वात्मास्वपनं परं विजये श्रीकृष्णसङ्कीर्तनम् नमो मदारि बहुधा जसर्वशक्ति तत्रार्पिदानीमिदा स्मरणेन काला एतादृशी तव कृपा भगवन् ममाहि हृदैव मीदृशमिहाजनि अनुरागाः तृणारपि शुचीचेन तरोरपि सहिष्णुना अमानिना मानदेन कृतनीय सदाहरि न धनं न जनं न सुन्दरीम् सविताम् वा जगदीशकामये मम जन्मनि जन्मनीश्वरि भवदा भक्तिरहे दुहित्वे ऐनम् दधनो जगङ्गनम् पतितामाम् वृषमे भवाम्बुदो कृपया तव पादपङ्कजस्थितगोलीसदृशम् विचिन्तय मयनङ्गलदश्रुधारया वदनम् गद्गदर्भयाया पुलगयविजनम् कदावभूतवन्नाम ग्रहणे भविष्यति युगायितम् निमेषेण चक्षुषा प्राविशायितम् शून्यायितम् जगत्सर्वम् गोविन्द ग्रहे न मे आश्लिष्य वा पादरताम् विनष्टु माम् अदर्शनाम् मर्महदाम् करोतु वा यथा तथा वा विदधा तुलम् वद
സ്വഭാവജേന കൗന്തേയ നിബദ്ധസ്വേന കർമ്മണ കർത്തും നെച്ചസി എൻമോഹാൽ കരിഷ്യസി അവശോപിതൽ. സോ മെൻഷൻ ഇൻ ദിസ് ദാറ്റ് ദി ഋഷീസ് ഫോളോഡ് ദിസ് പാത്ത് ദാറ്റ് ദേ ഗേവ് ഇമ്പോർട്ടൻസ് ടു സെൽഫ് റിയലൈസേഷൻ, നോയിങ് ഹൂ വി ആർ മോർ ദാൻ ദി personality behind it. This personality-centered style came from Buddha's time. It is after that this personality-centered spiritual life began. It didn't happen before that. This is all modern things, isn't it? So that's why, though you can see, therefore, so many religions have come because of that, because of this. Everyone who comes, he comes with a new idea, and he introduces that into the society, and people feel that this is something new we have got now to hold on to. So, and everybody becomes the incarnation then. So, in here, in Sanatana Dharma, we can see that ordinary people are few nowadays. It's most Sanatana Dharma, their personalities were never given any importance. So, why? Because this personality tradition gets wiped out in the Sanatana Sampradaya. Sanatana Dharma, it gets wiped out. So, the more we surrender to the Sampradaya process, it will be more auspicious to us, because in that process our own ego gets wiped out, gets dissolved there. If you ask the question, is there no problem in the Sampradayam then? Sampradaya system, is there no problem? So, it is not possible to create a Sampradayam without problems. Sampradayam also, there will be problems. Because Buddha started his program finding faults with Karmakandam. You see, that's where Buddha caught on that. Karmakandam, they were absorbed in, they engaged in killing animals without any kindness to them. And Buddha noticed that, and that was the main preaching propaganda tool what Buddhism has used. When they found fault with the Karmakandam of the Veda, saying that unnecessary killing of the animals is forbidden, and therefore Buddha took up that as his most valuable principle, ahimsa, non-violence, and he preached Buddhism on that basis. So, on that way, so finding out the faults in the Karmakandam section of the Vedas, the way it was practiced then, that is actually helped Buddha's cause. And Buddha created his Buddhism from that, came out from that. So afterwards, after his time, that before Buddha left this world, lot of other bad practices which were present in the various other religions, they also came into Buddhism at that time. So Buddha himself says that, whatever I have rejected, that has all come into this Buddhism. He mentions that. So, and similarly, along with that, the ragam, dvesham, and quarrels, arguments, fights, everything started along with that. You can always see that, and not only that, they created a new Karmakandam. They rejected already the Karmakandam in the Vedam, and they created another Karmakandam of their own. So, and you can look at that, how it has happened. Look at the Tibetan Buddhism. If you look at the Tibetan Buddhism, they have created lot of devadas in that, and the new kinds of rituals and spiritual practices, everything came out through the Tibetan. So on the one side, they rejected whole Karmakandam in the Vedam, but a branch of this Buddhism, they have gone and created, because they couldn't remain without a Karmakandam. So they created another Karmakandam. They felt like the need to have a ritualistic side of spiritual life. They felt the essentials for it. So they created on their own. That's why so many devadas in the Tibetan Buddhism, if you look at that, you will see the Dalai Lama and all other people who comes in that tradition. They had to have it. They couldn't remain without that. The Dalai Lama and all the other lamas have come in that tradition. What is the reason? Body is still there. As long as you have a body, body will demand all these things. Vasana is there, sabhavam is there. So karma is necessary, and therefore Karmakandam came into existence. So even though Buddha spoke about nirvanam, mukti and everything, everybody could not reach that state of Buddha who were following him, is it not? How many people have reached Buddha's state, Buddha's realization? So therefore, new Karmakandam and new sampradayams came into their religion also, and therefore, they had to create. Buddha's way of life was not always strictly adopted. again householders were there. So for householders also had to fit into that Buddhism. Whatever Bauddha Dharma was present there, and therefore the lamas, they started getting married. They start getting married. So then they have created a sampradayam from that. So initially they have rejected the Vedam. They rejected the Vedam, but instead they created their own Vedam and their own processes later. This is what has happened in the Buddhism. If you look at the Buddhism that comes from the Tibetan parampara, if you look there, they have their own things and so many new rituals, so many new authorities, so many new shastram, everything they have created for their karmakandam, what they wanted to do. Already they rejected the karma, Buddha rejected the whole karmakandam and the followers created a new karmakandam. This is how it is. Religion is always like that, isn't it? You will see this again and again happening, many, many instances, this repetition continuously happening. So, Buddha was saying there that slaughtering animals was forbidden, and compassion to all the living entities, ahimsa, was the prime principle. So, even in them, among their who spoke those ahimsa principles, even among them, the killing of animals and eating meat has come into their practices. It has come in there. So, so these principles are like that, whatever we create. And eating habits, for example, although food has been given so much importance in various traditions, but still, in every tradition, you will see how it gets polluted later on. It'll keep changing. It's impossible to hold on to that fact. Now, we are ourselves seeing in our own systems how much adjustments is being made to satisfy everybody, isn't it? So what is indicating to? Why has it happened like that? Because if you deny one's prakriti, this will happen. If you deny somebody's prakriti, look at this way, in India now, about this, imposition of this alcohol is being introduced now in some places, but it's not working. It's not working. They were giving the example of Gujarat. So it seems that they have gone and investigated this, what's happening in Gujarat. But apparently, plenty of alcohol is available in Gujarat. And instead of being sold legally through the shops, it's all done through the different other methods. So this question is coming up. Many states, they want to bring back this, what do they call, prohibition. Prohibition. But they are also conscious of the fact that if you bring prohibition, they will go and do things in the behind the scene, underground. They will start making alcohol. And that causes more disaster than the way it's being sold in the shop. So this dilemma, why? Because if you deny prakriti, then this is their nature. People drink, they want alcohol, they got used to it. And Vedam never agreed with that principle. Vedam says that only one group of people who are very serious about spiritual life, only they are elevated and they alone can be accepted in that way. The whole society, to put them in one lot to say that everybody will become spiritually serious and follow all the rules and regulations, that will not happen. That will not happen. Why? Because Vedam recognize this principle. What is that? Svabhava niyadam karmam. Kurvan nabnodi kelbisham. Svabhavam will dictate a person. If his vasanas is to drink and to eat meat and engage in all other activities, it will be very difficult to tell him to follow the highest principles of religion, four regulative principles. Even that won't be acceptable. So, rishis understood this principle. What they said was, at least one group of people who are very, very serious in spiritual life, who are willing to surrender and sacrifice their life for spiritual advancement, let them follow these principles and let them take that lead. And others, wherever they fit in, they have to be allowed to continue with that. They allowed to continue. That is how this varnam was created. Isn't it? Varna dharma was created like that. So certain people were allowed to eat and to drink also. And you can also see in the Bhagavatam, it says on what principle it is allowed. That's also spoken there. So Vedam never rejected Prakriti. Whereas all others are rejecting Prakriti. Prakriti means one Swabhavam, is it not? So if in a Swabhavam in a person is too powerful, that if you write it off, it will come out in another form and will work in this world. If you don't offer alcohol to those who are addicted to that or who are drinking that, if you tell him, no matter how many verses you quote from Bhagavad Gita, he's not going to listen to it. At the time comes, he will need it. If he doesn't get it, he'll go crazy. He will demand that. So therefore, Prakriti is important. Prakriti is not something, Prakriti is Swabhavam, isn't it? The person's nature, and that you can't deny in a person. So therefore, in the Bhagavatam you will see mentions there that for those who want to eat meat, they are allowed to eat meat, but through sacrifices on a particular day. So bring some restrictions to it. That is how much you can do to minimize that tendency. So just like a de-addiction, that's how it's brought into the sacrifices. And similarly, those who are, instead of polluting the whole society, men have that nature. So for them, in order to restrict that, polluting the whole society, they've created the system of marriage. Get married and live peacefully with the wife so that you do not have that problem in the society. Otherwise, the whole society will be in a serious problem, is it not? So, and because as far as we know that everyone is not ready for sannyasam in this world that way. They are supposed to live through the pravarti process, pravarti margam. They will do karmam in this world. They have to maintain their life. In a certain, that much vairagyam, they are ready for that. So for such people, there has to have a system for them. And that is a system that Vedic tradition is talking about. If you look into the Bhagavatam, you will see that Karavyajana Maharshi says this to Nimi. Why this has been created? That control your sex desire through marriage, and eating meat is concerned through sacrifices, and alcohol consumption through sacrifices, everything restricted and controlled in such a way. So my main thing is, only if there is good householders, then there will be good sannyasis will come out from that. First class householder life creates first class sannyasis. First class sannyasis. So knowing all these things very well, what the rishis have done, that a personality comes very powerful in a society, this whole system will collapse. This is the after effect of that. If you give importance to personality, and centered around a personality, if you develop things, when that personality goes away, or if the personality becomes too strong, this system will collapse. This won't survive. This won't be able to survive. Because in order to have a collective group of people who lead a life of spirituality, to maintain them, centered around a person is not possible. They knew this. The rishis knew the problems of this kind of organization. That is why they insisted that one side, they are giving a lot of respect to Buddha, Lord Buddha, and even spoken about him as an incarnation of Krishna. Is it not? But on the other side, Prakriti is there. You can't go with your bhakti towards Buddha there. One side there is great devotion to bhakti, other side there is Prakriti. If you reject Prakriti, or if you do not take into account Prakriti's force, Prakriti will show its force to us. That's the way Prakriti operates, isn't it? And that the power of Prakriti is so strong that if you do not acknowledge the power of Prakriti, she will make sure that we learn the lesson from her. She will teach us that. So that is what we are seeing in the Prakriti. So if you reject Prakriti and say, like Buddha said about mercy, karunyam, to living entities, and then Buddha alone finally realized that it's not working. Because sometimes when he went for bhiksha as a sannyasi, people were giving him meat to him. After all this, they were offering meat to him as the bhiksha, and told him that if you want you can eat it, otherwise you can leave it, they said to him. So finally Buddha says to him that many of the Buddhist sannyasis, what did they do? They started finding out where the meat is given bhiksha and started going there. This has happened in their system. How you can't change the society like that. It's not so easy. Because we are not accepting the fact that the whole human species, we have got our vasanas inside us. And that vasana is not, you can wipe out one instruction if you give it in the paper like that. It won't go away. Vasana will come back and will forcefully it will act that way. So, Prakriti you can't deny. That is why Krishna is talking about Swabhavam so seriously. You see, why Krishna is keep on stressing about Swabhavam? Swabhava Jaina Kaunteya. It has come with us when we were born. Many instances, say for example, many in the human species you can see, in their last birth, they may be in the animal species. And in the animal species, they may have developed that animal vasanas, is it not? Suppose you are a tiger or you are a snake. You would have had that vasana inside us. And just because I got a human body now, that vasana has not gone from inside. So even though I got a human body, my previous vasana will still demand that deer or rabbit or lamb or whatever, chicken or whatever it is, I would like to have it still because the vasana is there. That is why that desire is coming so strongly. So, and when it is there, just because I'm in the shape and form, I'm a human form, that doesn't mean that my vasanas are all pure. Equally, all other things also, all other things like meat eating, sex life, intoxication, gambling, all these are vasanas that has come from previous lives what we lived. Even in human body, if we have lived a life like that previous lifetimes, that vasanas will be there still in us. And that won't go away like that. Just by somebody telling me it's said in the Bhagavad Gita like this, not to eat meat. Nobody will give it up. So vasanas are powerful. And that is why Krishna is saying here that Prakriti, don't try to deny Prakriti. It will not work. You stay in your place where it is in the Prakriti, where you fit in properly. And don't go and try to agitate the whole thing in your own way. So, but important thing is to know your own Prakriti, what that Prakriti means, and live in that state. And little by little, transcend that Prakriti, what you have got. If I have that sinful vasanas in me, overnight to present it to somebody that I am very pure will be cheating. Is it not? Will be cheating. And then what will happen? You'll put all your saffron clothes, saffron dhoti and danda, and then you'll go to some prostitute somewhere without anybody's knowledge. Is that good? That is how things go bad, isn't it? So before we reach that stage, before our vasanas goes away, we shouldn't do things like that. That's disturbing the society. So when Krishna is talking about winning over the Prakriti means transcending the Prakriti. And that has to be done through knowledge. And that is what Krishna is saying in this verse, 60th verse. Svabhava jena kaundeya nibhaddhasvena karmana kartham nechasiyan mohal karishyasi avashobhitat. Very open statement. Karishyasi avashobhitat. Krishna is saying that the svabhavam I have given, created, is much more powerful than any of your so-called plans and organization and management. It will not work. We have seen this happening again and again, is it not? So many times, we make somebody big guru or big personality in spiritual life. And then he goes and does something. And everybody starts thinking, why did this happen to him? It should not have happened to him. And they say, oh, he probably was not chanting his rounds properly. They find fault with the sadhana and all that. That's all useless. It's nothing to do with chanting the rounds. This svabhavam inside is more powerful than your chanting rounds. It'll come out when it has comes out. You won't be able to stop that. And that's what is Krishna saying here. So, if you say that there is no thing called svabhavam, then you will be in trouble. That's what Krishna is saying basically. Svabhava jena kaundeya nibhaddhasvena karmana kartum nachasi enmohal karishyasi avashobhiyat. He says, you are so much, and not only that, because of your svabhavam, so many other people will get into trouble. So many other people will get into trouble. You know how many times it has happened, don't you? So when you say that everybody is equal, everybody is one, Krishna is saying everybody is not one, everybody is not equal. This is the point Krishna is driving at. Krishna is telling us everybody is not equal and everybody is not one. In that, svabhavam is concerned. Swarupam is concerned, everybody is one. Svabhavam is concerned, everybody is different. This point we have to accept that. In the platform of the soul, we are all Alma. We are all Alma. But in the platform of Prakriti, if you say everyone is same, that will not work. Can you say that the snake, the tiger, the leopard, the lion, the elephant and all others are all equal? They are never equal, are they? Even in the animal species, they are not equal. If you say that they are all equal. But, and therefore, samatvam yogam uchyate, Krishna is saying in the Bhagavatam, isn't it? In the Bhagavad Gita. And if you say that samatvam yogam uchyate, and you cannot sit quiet saying that. But when you say samatvam yogam uchyate means that even among the lower species, that means birds, insects and aquatics, everywhere, that equal vision has to come at some point. That is what samatvam yogam uchyate means. But at that stage, you can see that it's not good enough if it's alone in the human form. Even in the lower species, samatvam is necessary. But that samatvam is on the spiritual platform, not on the bodily level. So, you can see that Prakriti will operate. Prakriti is so powerful. She will operate in all levels. And therefore, if, like you can see nowadays that we are all equal, isn't it? Man, woman, they are all equal. And you can see the problems that's coming from that. We are all in trouble. We don't know what to do about it. Because if you say anything against it, you can be taken to the court. Is it not? Be taken to the court. Or and that too in the spiritual field. So, you can see, there is always problem about this. So, trying to improve all these things in this world, Krishna's point is that trying to make it all equal will not work, it will only create more problems. So, dharmam has got its own, the boundary. And if you change that boundary, how it has been created, if you try to start changing the boundary, it is very dangerous. It's very dangerous. We are experiencing all the problems, and we know where the problem is coming from, but we can't do anything about it. This is the situation, isn't it? So that boundary line, what Krishna has spoken in the, because rishis have spoken, they know us well, our nature, human nature, they have studied so well. And therefore, when they formulated Smriti, They knew very well what they are talking about. And they understand that if we follow that, the society will be reasonably peaceful without causing too much of aggravation. But if you change that, and the process what they have given, or the path they have given out, rishis have given, that's a perfect system, what they have created. But if you break that boundary and put your leg the other side or this side, then there is danger. There is danger. So whatever problems you may have in following what the rishis have set up, that problems, you will not be able to correct it. You will not be able to correct it. Because that is the truth. Rishis have spent so much of their time in analyzing this. That is why Smriti Shastra. We have Shruti and Smriti, isn't it? Smriti is all centered around the rishis finds out. Rishi has found out. You can see Manusmriti, Parashara Smriti, Yajnavalkya Smriti, all the many, many Gautama Smriti, they all have, Smriti has written. Because based on the conclusions of the Vedam, they have formulated a way of life and given to us. If you follow this, you will be peacefully situated here. And they have common things, many of them have many common things as well. So, and that is why Krishna says, if there is any problem in that prakriti, that problem in the rules what the rishis have given to us, if there is any defects in that, that defects is due to the prakriti, not due to the rules what the rishis have given. While following the rules given by the rishis, which is the smriti, in following that, if there is any defects in there, that defects is not due to the smriti, but it is due to the prakriti, and that you can't do anything about it. You can see, we say about smriti, we criticize smartha brahmins, or we criticize them for that. After saying all that, we have created our own smriti. So where is the difference? We say smriti is not necessary. We follow shruti. And we rejected smriti. But when it came to the Goswamis, they had to write smriti. Gopala Bhatta Goswami, they wrote smriti. And which was later on, Rupa Goswami has formulated smriti for Gaudiya Vaishnavas, another smriti has come. So smriti is necessary. It will not be possible to completely write it off. Anything is like that in spiritually. So therefore, and that Krishna has spoken here earlier. If you look at the verse 48, he mentions this. Sahajam karma kaunteya sadosham abhi na tyajed sarva arambho hi doshena dome agniriva vrida. That's what Krishna is saying in that verse. If you read Krishna's verses, you will get an idea of the complicated situation. In this, bhavajena kaunteya nibaddhasvena karmana kartam nachasi enmohal karishyasi avashopital. So there Krishna is saying that the rishis have given you this process of life in this world. If you follow that rigidly, that is the best option of all. Whereas if you try to modify that, or saying that it is not practical, and there is problems here also, Krishna is saying that problem is not due to the rishis. Rishis have given you the best option of all. But if you reject that, and if you find any problems, that problem is all not due to the rishis, it's due to the prakriti, and that is difficult to overcome. But Krishna's point is that sahajam karma kaundeya sadosham abhinatyajel. You say, see Krishna says there, even if there is problem there, dosham, natyajed, don't give it up. No, natyajed. Why? Sarvarambahi doshena dume agniri vavrata. There is nothing here which is perfect. That is important principle. There is no law or no spriti in that sense, as far as the life is concerned, which is perfect, which we can say it is perfect. It is not there. So, he is saying to Arjuna, it is not possible to create a system without any defects. That's what he's saying. Krishna is saying this. It's not possible to create a system without any defects. So this is the system which one, the smriti, what the rishis have given, that is a system where the maximum defects have been taken out. Maximum defects have been taken out. And you will not be able to create another system better than this. This is the conclusion. You won't be able to create another system better than this. Whatever defects are there in this system, still accept it and live with that. That is Krishna's recommendation on that. In other words, it is not the best, but nothing better can be done. That's the principle. Because you can see how the problem is that rishis given us a way of life, they created varnashrama dharmam and set up a system like that. We rejected varnashrama dharmam on the basis of what? Saying that everybody is not equal. Is it not? That's our argument. Everybody is not equal. Everybody should be equal, should they not, in this world. Man, women should be equal. All types of people, whether he's a drunkard or whether he's a saintly person, they should be equal, according based on our principles. But that is not possible. Krishna is saying that everybody cannot be equal. Only thing is, he says that this system of varnam and ashramam, based on gunam and karmam, that system will work, and that is the best system possible. There is nothing better than that. This is all. Again, stressing the importance of varnashrama dharmam. Varnashramam is necessary. Otherwise, you can imagine, in the absence of that varnam and ashramam, how much a society is suffering today because of that. So, situated within that prakriti, being situated within that prakriti, and being situated in that sanatana dharmam, whatever we can do, we should do that. That is the reason. In sanatana dharmam, they won't allow any reformers. Reformation is not allowed. Reformation is not allowed in sanatana dharmam. Many people have started all that, but reformation is not allowed. Reason is this, that they know that the system what the rishis have created is the best system possible. If you try to reform, it will get worse. And that's what has always happened. So reformers, they'll come and they'll make a meal of the whole thing. And whatever that was in the parampara, they will destroy it. And they will destroy the sampradayam also. And whatever culture was present in the sampradaya system, that also will go. Samskaram will all get destroyed. And principle is that never to turn things upside down like that. Because sometimes some personalities come and they are very, very powerful. And due to their presentation or their way of presenting things to this world, many people will follow them. And eventually they will realize that things did not work out the way they wanted things to happen. So that is why it is spoken like that. Even in other traditions, for example, even in the music, when Tyagaraja composed the songs and certain ragas were given to that and it was sung in that way, later on people started creating new ragas on the same kirtanam what he has written about that. And Devan, that was rejected for this reason. When somebody has given with authority certain injunctions and certain system that has been created, if you criticize that and question and reform everything, it is a very dangerous process, a dangerous process. And if you want to sing in another way, you create your own kirtanam later and sing that whichever way you like it. And whichever ragam you want to follow, and you can sing in that. But why go and put your hands in something which already has been established? And you have no right for that. Similarly, Vedam, Shastram, all these things, that's already there in a particular format, for a particular way it has been structured. And if you are not happy with that, you go and create your own Vedam, but don't change this Shastram, what the rishis have given us. So, and in the name, using this name of the Shastram and the Vedam, don't try to alter it. And you should not speak anything outside that, what is in the Shastram. Because if you have changed anything, that means it's coming from your ego. And that is what Acharya Swami mentioned here. He says, asambradayavit. Asambradayavit means that one who does not know the value of sampradayam. Value of sampradayam. Sampradayams mentions, for example, any sampradayam if you take, four Vaishnava sampradayam or the Advaita sampradayam, look at the personalities who were in that tradition, that alone will give you the strength of the sampradayam. If you look back into the traditions in all the sampradayam, whether it was Ramanujas, Madhvas, Vishnu Swamis, or Shankaracharya sampradayam, starting from Narayana, Vasishta, Shakti, Parashara, Vedavyas, and then Shuga Brahmarshi. All from father to son, father to son. They held that parambara, Advaita sampradayam stayed in that way. You will see this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada mentions that. Different paramparas, who were the great acharyas in each tradition. Similarly, Ramanuja tradition also, if you look, you will see there. All the great personalities who were there, Vedanta Deshikar and Lakshmi Devi, so many big people. Rudra sampradayam, Vishnu Swami sampradayam, if you look, starting from Lord Shiva onwards, many acharyas who came there, Nilakantha and many others. Similarly, Madhvacharya's tradition. So you can see, even though Chaitanya Mahaprabhu changed to Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattvam, he preached, and the holy name Srimad Bhagavatam, still he stuck to sampradayam, Madhvacharya sampradayam, didn't deviate from that. Because if there is no sampradayam, that won't be acceptable. That won't be acceptable. So sampradayam, without that sampradayam, one who has realized that, if one learns to live within that framework, because of their realizations and the great personalities who appeared in that, for them who does not live in that, sarva shastra vidahi, even though he has studied all the shastram, Ajahn Swami says, don't go very close to him. He is murkham ubhachaniya sarvatra. He is a murkhada in him. So, that is why, after saying this, Krishna is saying, know the prakriti very well. Important thing is to know the prakriti very well. And how to offer that prakriti in a person to Krishna. And that is what Krishna is going to talk about from now onwards. You will see that in these verses, up to this point, verse 60, from 56 to 60 is one topic that is spoken. Beginning with Sarvakarmani Abhisada Kurvano Madhvyapashraya Mat Prasada Davapnodi Shashwadam Padam Avyayam. From then on, Krishna said about karma, is it not? And he also mentioned about the associated issues with reference to karma. Karma is connected with swabhavam. Krishna says any decision you make with reference to karma, you have to take into account swabhavam. Otherwise that decision is faulty. And after saying that, Krishna said that swabhavam is inborn with the person. And therefore, he is in the prison, within that prison house of swabhavam he is living here. In this world, we are living in the prison of swabhavam and karmam. And therefore, you cannot ignore the impact of that swabhavam and karmam while making these decisions. It is on that basis that Krishna is saying, the rishis have formulated smriti and given us that. And that is the best system. If you try to make any other system, it will be more defective and more faulty. There is no other better system than what rishis have told, given. So keeping all that in the perspective, Krishna is now going to say to us that this svabhavajena kaundeya nibaddhasvena karmana kartham nachasi yanmohal karishyasi avashobital. Because why you will engage if you don't follow this, how swabhavam will take over everything ultimately. That is the point Krishna is going to say now. For example, earlier Krishna spoke about this process, how to absorb in Krishna, dhyanam process. You remember? In the last, before verse 50, in the 52, Krishna mentioned this, vivikta sevi laghvashi yadavakaya manasa dhyana yoga paro nityam vairagyam samupashrita. Remember, we talked about dhyanam at that time. Dhyanam. And how everything develops into that dhyanam. Brahma Buddha Prasannalma Nashojadi Nakamshadi Sama Sarveshu Buddheshu Madbhaktim Labhade Param. Before that stage comes, Krishna spoke about karmam, is it not, earlier, then jnanam, then buddhi, then dhriti. Then he told us how to bring everything into the mode of sattvagunam, all of them, in under three categories, sattvagunam, rajagunam, tamogunam, all the other things, which means karmam, jnanam, buddhi, dhriti, all everything. And then when buddhi is purified, he mentions there, dhriti, willpower becomes in the mode of goodness, and shabdadin vishayananyo ragadvesho vedasvicha. In due course from him, ragadvesham goes away, and shabdadin vishayantitva ragadvesho vedasvicha. That ragam dvesham will leave him. And then he mentioned, vivitta sevi legvashi yadavakaya manasa dhyana yoga paronityam vairagyam samupashrada. So the stage when dhyanam comes to a person, Krishna has spoken before. And as a sadhana he has spoken that. So, and with the result of dhyanam, what happened? Krishna says it will eventually turn to bhakti. Is it not? That dhyanam will turn to bhakti. You can see there, that dhyana yogam, and then from, he mentioned there, ahangara balam darpam kamam krodham parigraham vimucha dharmama shanda brahma bhuyaya kalpade. That means in that dhyanam stage, these problems, like ahangaram balam darpam, kamam krodham parigraham, they will leave him when the dhyanam builds up inside, and he will come to the platform of Brahman. That's what we talked about. If you remember, you should not forget all that. So, vimucha dharmama shandi will come, he will get released from this mine, me and mine. Vimucha nirmama. Nirmama means freedom from that me and mine, mamata. It will happen. And he will come to the platform of Brahma. Brahma bhuyaya kalpade. And in that Brahma Buddha stage, bhakti will develop. Is it not? Brahma Buddha prasannalpa nashojani na kamshadi sama sarveshu bhudeshu mad bhaktim labhade param. So bhakti develops at that stage, which is called parabhakti, at the stage of that Brahman realized state. So we have seen here that from dhyanam stage, it comes to bhakti at the end. And at that stage he realizes that my identity is not this body, neither this personality. Instead, what is my identity? Brahma Buddha. Brahma Mayam. Brahma Buddha Prasannalma. So that is where he said, Brahma Buddha Prasannalma na shochani na kamshadi sama sarveshu bhudeshu mad bhaktim labhade param. He said. So proper bhakti, or proper bhakti, what Krishna is saying, is only jnani has. Jnani alone has proper bhakti. This is what Krishna's point is. Only jnani has proper bhakti. You can see this, jnani udara sarvayedeshu jnani tvalpmeiva me matam astida sahayuktalpa mameva uttamam gadim. In the, which are fourth chapter, isn't it? Yeah. A number of verses where you may wonder why Krishna is glorifying a jnani so much in this way. Then, prior to that also, yeah. Look at from 16 onwards. Chadurvida bhajande imam jana sugrdi arjuna artha jityasu artharti jnani. Chabharadarshava. Four kinds of devotees he says. Artha, jityasu, artharti, jnani. And out of these four, Krishna is saying that jnani is very dear to me. That's the next few verses. Tesham jnani nityayukta. Ega bhaktir vishishyade priyohi jnani no thyartam aham sacha mama priya. Jnani is very dear to me and I am very dear to the jnani, he says there. Then he says, udara sarva evaide jnani tvalpmeiva me matam astida sahi yuktalma mameva uttamam gadim. Bahunam janmanam ande jnanavanmam pravadyade vasudeva sarvamidi samahalma sudurlabha. So, various things Krishna has spoken there, and here also, while coming back to this verse here, that Brahma Bhuda stage only, you have proper bhakti. Proper bhakti is only in the Brahma Bhuda stage. That's important principle. And and as long as I do not know who I am, till I don't know who I am, and when I don't know about my own identity, what's happening is that I will think many things as me, which I am not. Till I know who I am, till I know who I am, I will go and identify with many other things in this world, and I will think I am that, like this body. Shastram is telling me I am not the body, but I think I am this body. Similarly, I take so many other identifications, isn't it, in the society, which is called Adhyasam. Adhyasam means accepting so many other identities in this world. All that will happen. So, as long as you do not know who you are, and as long as you are identifying with anything else, distress must come. That is the principle. Because of false identification alone. Just because you have identified with the wrong person or wrong designation, whatever it may be, just because of identification alone, you will get distress in this world. Simply by identification, you are inviting distress. That is the first thing Krishna says. So, it is only for this purpose that Krishna is repeatedly mentioning, realize the self, realize the self, realize the self. He keeps repeating that. So, and when you start inquiring, if your intelligence turns in that direction, Krishna calls it as Vishuddha Buddhi. Vishuddha Buddhi means purified intelligence, comes at that stage. And with that purified intelligence, naturally the inquiry will be about your own identity, who you are, Swarupam. That's what you are inquiring. Who I am, what is my name, who am I? That inquiry will naturally come. And when I say I am, what is this I am means? Is it not? At the it's definitely not the body, because body is dying and going. So how can you say I am this body? You can't say that. Body is going to go one day, one way or the other. So it is obvious to us at that time that separately from this body I do exist. Separately from this body I exist. And that existence separately from the body in the form of awareness, which is present in us at the moment, which I call it as aham, aham, that awareness. What is the nature of that awareness? How would I understand that awareness? How would I feel that I am that? How will I experience that I am that? That awareness. Awareness is there in everybody. We have spoken about it so many times, is it not? That awareness is present in us, and we know very well that it is not this body which I am talking about, me, all the time. Because if it was the body, when the body is finished, everything is over, isn't it? But the fact is, everything is not over when the body is finished. Krishna is saying to us that the fact that this awareness is present in all the three states, Jagrat, Swapnam and Sushupti, body even you are leaving as soon as you leave the vacant state. As soon as you move into the dream state, the body has gone. So how can you identify with the body and say, I am this body? When you go into the dream state, the so-called mind which you are identifying with, you are leaving the mind also. So how can you say you are the mind? But when you go into the deep sleep, as soon as you wake up in the morning after the deep sleep, that blissful experience you had is following and telling you that you had a great experience. Somebody is reporting back to you, and Krishna is saying, that report what is there is who has experienced that, that is your real identity. In Sushupti, what you have experienced. So, Krishna's point is here, that he said that continuously, these three states of Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti, one who is serious in spiritual life, if you continuously evaluate that, and understand the seriousness of the three states, and the experience that what he is experiencing in the deep sleep state, if he is able to identify with that blissful experience, then he will know that that experience is his real identity. Shastram is saying this to us. And therefore he mentioned there, Dhyana Yoga Paro Nityam. Dhyana Yoga Para. That is that Dhyana Yoga I'm talking about. To go back to analyze that. Dhyana Yoga Paro Nityam. So Dhyana means, just not meditating on any form. That is the Dhyana which is in the Ashtanga Yoga system. So rather, instead of that, finding out who is performing that dhyanam, who is performing the meditation, that is Dhyana Yoga. As far as Krishna is concerned, it is not a form, meditating a particular form. That is what is Dhyana Yoga Paravanityam means. Dhyana Yoga Paravanityam means constantly, due to the inquiry of the self, finding out who is the person who is engaged in dhyanam. That is, and not the dhyanam process what is spoken in the 6th chapter. That's not the one here. This Dhyana Yoga Paravanityam means finding out the person who is engaged in the dhyanam. That is what it is saying here. So similarly, who is engaged in the dhyanam and who is engaged in the karma? Who is engaged in the karma? And what is that person's identity? What is his identity? That inquiry. So till that revelation happens, we get clear in our own realization that the person who is performing dhyanam is that conscious awareness. Who is engaged in the dhyanam is that awareness. Because it is in the awareness that all these realizations are coming. It's not happening in the mind or intelligence. Mind or intelligence, realizations won't come. Realizations comes in the awareness. And because it comes in the awareness, that is permanent. That is what Krishna also spoke about it many times in the Bhagavad Gita. Brahma Nirvana Mrachali, Esha Brahmi Sthiti. All that is referring to the realization from the self. So, holding on to that, and our attention or Shraddha, if it gets established there, Krishna is saying here, that, for example, you can observe this, when somebody speaks to you very harshly or rudely, at that time, you give your attention to yourself. At that time you can see that inside somebody is registering that very strongly. Is it not? Somebody talked to you very rudely. Then immediately you will see all your attention comes together. So many things, suppose somebody tells you something, some other thing, some news in the world, he talks to you, you may listen half, some half, after all it's not important. Suddenly if he changed the whole subject about you, and he start talking about you very strongly, you will see, you become so alert, and all the attention coming together to listen to that, isn't it? So, that is the nature of this awareness. You see that? It is called Ekadeshiya Satta. This capacity to bring all your attention together to one point, by talking about you and getting your attention into it, is called Ekadeshiya Satta. Ekadeshiya Satta means that some Satta means our awareness. That Satta is distributed now. Suppose I talk to you about so many things which are not related to you, some general topics in the world. You will listen to it. Some things you may listen, something you will say, oh, he's just talking some nonsense. We'll leave it now. You're not interested. But suppose I start talking to you about you directly, immediately you will see all your attention come together. That is called Ekadeshiya Satta. It's an important thing in spiritual life to notice this. That where this sudden attention came to you, without any, what prompted that happen to give so much attention? Why? We're talking about you. So this Ekadeshiya Satta, Krishna is saying here, what is the nature of that attention that's coming together like that? Aham, aham, that vibration inside, what is that? And when you look at the children, they will say, you look at the children, how they talk about these things. They don't have that Ekadeshiya Satta in them. It hasn't come together. So sometimes the children will say, when they want something, they won't say, I want it. Because I hasn't developed strongly in them. They will say their own names and say, he wants it or she wants it. Their own name they will say. And so they are some emperor or something, they will talk like that. So then later on, it is only when that center gets stronger, where this Ekadeshiya Satta, when it gets stronger, he starts saying, me, me, me. I gets established very strongly, and he starts building upon that. So it will change from one language to another language, but whatever it may be, this principle holds good. That Ekadeshiya Satta, when everything comes together in relationship with me, becomes important in every grown-up person. Every grown-up person. So this thing called the I, in different languages, in different way, you may use that. Sound may be different, but reference is to the same ego. Is it not? It is reference to the same person. I. Because we don't know the nature of this I, and in different languages you have different words to present that ego, to present, speak about that ego. In English, I, and in Germanish, or in me, in Hindi, and in all other languages, different words they are using. Words may be different, but reference is to the same object, is it not? So, that is a language. Language, everything can change. But language is only a verbal thing. It's only a verbal thing. That is called Vachyartham. Vachyartham may be different, but Lakshyartham is the same one. Referring to the same thing, but in the words it may be spoken in a different way. So, when in English you may say I, and in other languages it may be different. So, similarly, in the Manomandalam, in the platform of the mind, if you look at there also, you can see so many things are common. So many things are common to everybody. So this I is also one of those common things in everybody. Ahankaram is a common thing in everybody. Like envy, for example, anger, greed, these are present in everybody, in everyone. But greed as a quality, in its effect or impact in a person, in everybody it is the same. They are not different. I may be greedy for one thing, you may be greedy for another thing. But the factor, the greed, is exactly the same. Is it not? Similarly, anger. Similarly, lust. And so many other things also. So, similarly, this is a difference that has happened in the language. This thing called I. But the root of all these things is this ahankaram. And that ahankaram, if you give attention to that, the movement of that ahankaram, if you have gone and touched that, the root of that ahankaram, you have touched yourself. Because that ahankaram, where is it coming from? It's coming from the Atma. Coming from the self, is it not? If you look into the creation process, Satya Ahankaram, Rajas Ahankaram, Tamas Ahankaram. Three Ahankaram comes. Mahatattvam, from that Mahatattvam came the things, isn't it? And from Satya Ahankaram came the mind, Rajas Ahankaram came the senses, and Tamas Ahankaram came the Panchatanmatras and the elements, all came from that. But what Krishna is trying to tell us is, that Ahankaram is one. They are not many. There is only one Ahankaram. That Ahankaram is present in all of us. And we are addressing that as I in different ways, in different languages. Only language is different. Vastu is one. Vastu is one. So similarly, if you catch hold of that Ahankaram, through that Ahankaram, you can go back to the source where it came from. That is Atma. That is Atma. That is our pure identity. That's what Krishna says here. That, and if you have touched the source of that Ahankaram, you have touched yourself. Then you have met yourself, who you are then. Then there is no more. And that is where this Ahankaram is the place where everything is centered around. That means that is the center of all your miseries and pain in this world. All the miseries and pain is experienced at that point where the ahankaram is born, where ahankaram is born. So, and also it's the same center where all happiness is experienced. When something happy, as you say, if you feel happy in this world, and in some instance, sometimes something makes you happy here. Where is experiencing this happiness? The happiness is experienced, the root is there, where the ahankaram is there. That is where you are experiencing that. So, till you touch that root, nothing is affecting you. It's not affecting you. Only when it touches that root, it affects you. For example, somebody has spoken so many things. It has not spoken about you. It's not affecting you. Is it not? It's not affecting you. Somebody has spoken so many things about someone else, but it's not affecting you. Why? Because it has not gone and touched that root where it's coming from. So, as soon as I mention your name, immediately you come into action. You come, Ekadeshiya Satta comes in there. So, Krishna is saying here that Bhagavad Gita, whether you have heard Bhagavad Gita or not, is not an issue at all. But if you come to hear, you heard Bhagavad Gita or not, is not an issue. But suppose I asked one person here, that why did you come here? To sleep here? If I ask that, then that person won't sleep anymore after that. It will be very difficult because I've gone and touched that center. His center. Gone and touched that. Then he won't sleep. Why is that? If I ask you about Bhagavad Gita, you won't bother. You'll continuously dozing. But if I ask you, have you come here to sleep? Then you will suddenly wake up. Why? You've gone and touched that ahankaram inside. So, and in front of so many other people, if I ask that question, that's enough, isn't it? So afterwards, while leaving, you will say, why are you asking me? You will fire me for while leaving the room. It will happen. So that point is, what Krishna is making here is that, ahankaram, if you want to find out how it's working, you can see that by this process. So moment you touch that eye there, you have touched everything. Once you touch the eye, that is why they say that when somebody speaks to you rudely or somebody says something in relationship with you, that's enough to touch you. To touch you. That's where when you are touched. It is not physical touching the body. The psychic way to touch a person is to talk about that person. Immediately he will listen. He will be touched by that. So, and that place where you are getting touched is your center. Because that's where ahankaram was born. Ahankaram is surviving there. And it is no point in denying the existence of that point there. Everybody has that. So, and nobody will be able to take it out easily from there. Because it is an expression of the Atma. It's an expression of the Atma is this ahankaram. That is why when we say Jivatma and Paramatma, Paramatma is another form, is this Jivatma. It's not any different at all. For Vyavaharam purposes, we'll call Jivatma. But when this ahankaram goes away, with that Jivatma is also finished. He doesn't have any more existence after that. So, even if you say that it is not Atma, it is the closest point where you can touch Atma. Which one? This ego. Ahankaram is the closest point where you can get closest to Atma. Closest to Atma. Therefore, the easiest way to get back to Atma is to hold on to that point where ahankaram is taking birth and begin the inquiry there for the self. So, and the key for opening up the Atma is there at that point. So, so even in the meditation, dhyanam also, yogis also ask the same question, who I am? I am. We are saying, I am, and where am I? And who is inside? And as soon as you die and leave this body, you don't see that I anymore. Is it not? I has gone. So, but he is present there now. At the moment, he is present there. And therefore the awareness is there. Awareness is there. And therefore giving attention to that. And And you can see that I, that awareness, as much as you move away to the deep sleep state, where is he going? That awareness, where is it gone? And in nidra, in deep sleep state, it goes into layam. It goes and dissolves in the atma. Which one? Ahangaram. Ahangaram goes and dissolves in the atma in that deep sleep state. So we are not conscious of that. That is the only problem. But through the process of self-inquiry, people have inquired about that and they have come to that point. That is how many jnanis have realized this truth. And nidya na vidya, grahanam na vidya. There is a verse about that. So, svabhava jena kaundheya nibhaddasvena karmana kartum nechasi yan mohal karishyasi avashopital. After saying that, Krishna mentions there that immediately this is spoken, Krishna brings out this point that if you don't act based on this understanding, then I am telling you, Krishna says to Arjuna, you will be forced to act based on this. Why? What is the reason for that? Next verse. Ishvara sarva bhudanam hriddeshe arjuna tishtadi brahmayan sarva bhudani yendra rudhani mayaya ishvara sarva bhudanam hriddeshe arjuna tishtadi brahmayan sarva bhudani yendrarudhani mayaya. That is it. So, after talking about this ahangaram, svabhavam, karmam, everything, Krishna is summing up in this verse. He is saying to us that, look, you have understood now where you stand. Svabhavam is there, karmam is there, ahangaram is there. When all these three things are present in a person, svabhavam, karmam and ahangaram, do not act independently. Follow the shastram. Krishna said to Arjuna. And if you don't do that, what will happen? Ishvara sarva bhudanam hriddeshe arjuna tishtadi brahmayan sarva bhudani yantra rudhani mayaya. That means, says there that Ishvaraha, Ishvara shilo narayanaha sarva bhudanam sarva prainam hriddeshe hridaya deshe Arjuna, Shukla Andaralpa Sabhavam, Vishuddha Andakaranam, Ahascha Krishna Mahar Arjunamcha, Iti Darshana Tishtadi Stidim Lebheda. Krishna is saying that Ishvara, who is inside, as Andaryami, under the power of this Maya, power of Maya, and how just like the puppet is played by the puppeteer, how he is played with the puppets. In the same way, with the power of this Maya, he will start his work from inside. Ishvara, sarva bhudanam hriddeshe arjuna tishtadi. How? Brahmayan sarva bhudani. All living entities are acting under that force. That means if we do not take into account svabhavam, if you do not take into account karmam, if you do not take into account ahangaram, if you write it off all that, and if you act whimsically on your own, Krishna is saying, this force will come into effect. Which one? Power of Maya. Ishvara sarva bhudanam. Why? As Andaryami, who is present in the heart of every living entity. Sarva bhudanam, hrideshe, Arjuna, tishtadi. He is situated there. And he knows, brahmayan sarva bhudanam, how to put you into the giant wheel. How to put you there. He knows that. And he will act at that time. That's what Krishna is going to say that. So we'll continue with that next Saturday. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.